economic advisor to the president, Austin Goolsbee, Riotfest founder, Michael Patrician, and another episode of The Worst. And now here's your host, a man who failed his emissions test but doesn't even have a car, Justin Kaufman.
Sir, you're illegal. You're street illegal. Emission tests. Don't get me started. I got a long night. Good thing it's the worst tonight. Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend. I did. I joke about emissions tests as there was today was the day that anyone who was trying to get their June 1st license plate sticker renewed, they found out that they also had to get an emissions test. So across the state of Illinois, mostly in the Chicago area, lines for emission tests wrapped around miles. Miles. There was a report that one of the drivers in Aurora spent 1 hour for one block. That was how long the line was. It would take an hour per block. I made the mistake of doing the same thing. I'm like, oh, emissions. I got to get an emissions test? Oh, I got to do that? So I was like, oh, I guess I'll just go to Webster like I always do. And I've never had any problems. I usually go in there and I'm like, hey, how you doing? You know, like, mm-hmm. I thought that would be the case. I got there and it was like in the movie I Am Legend, when everyone's trying to get off the island. Like, that's what it was like. Jeez. There's a zombie apocalypse and there's only one boat off the island. That's what it was like at Webster and Elston today.
That sounds fun.
Because people were like, I have the right to turn left, you know, because we all feel like we have the right to turn left, like it's a God-given right. It's in the Bill of Rights. I have the right to turn left. Everyone was just turning left and being like, hey, I don't care if I'm blocking traffic. I need to get my emissions test.
Yeah.
And so all of Elston, all the way back, like past the Best Buy, going back towards Ashland, all the way into the city of Chicago, essentially a 3 mile trek was backed up because the one guy's like, I don't care. I'm turning left. It was a ridiculous day. And in my situation, I can't handle lines like that. So I was like, I'm not doing it. I don't care. Mm. You know what? And so I got on Google Maps. I'm like, I'm going to outfox everybody. So I found what was closest to the Webster in Ashland. And I'm like, it must be a city thing because we're all lazy in the city. So I'm like, well, you know what I'll do? I'll take 290 because it's clear right now. And I'll go out to the place off Lombard Street in Addison, Illinois.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right? Suburban is going to be nice. It's going to be easy.
In and out. Going to Czechoslovakia.
What do I? It's Czechoslovakia. What can you do? When I got close to the street, there were police cars everywhere. Like there was like a hazmat situation. There was like cherries going off and I'm like, oh, what's happening here? Oh, they're not letting me turn left. Oh, there must be an accident. What happened? It was the line for the emissions place in Addison, Illinois was probably, and I'm not exaggerating, it looped around all the way around back out to, and I don't know the streets very well out there, but around to the other big street, it was probably about 5 miles long. Like, it reminded me of the video that the person took at the TSA line at Midway went viral a couple weeks ago. It just didn't end. And everyone was, like, confined to one lane. And they're like, I got to get it. Today's the last day. So I bailed on that.
Yeah. Wait,
I took North Avenue. I'm like, you know what? I want to get to know the city and the suburbs around here. So Lombard, Addison, that kind of area. I got a little North Avenue out that way.
Yeah, so nice out there.
Got back into the city and said, you know what? I'll just be illegal. You know, to be honest with you, my sticker's due tomorrow. Maybe I'll go back up there tomorrow, you know, but I'll just put I'll drape the car. Every time I park the car, I'll drape it like it's in the jungle. I'll just put some leaves over it so people don't see it. I think that's what I'm going to do. Just for a day or two.
Who's got that kind of time to wait in that line?
I'm positive that people who are listening to WGN Radio went through that today and would probably, Bill and Wendy talked about, is crazy amount of time. And it's this whole system. I just read this whole article on CBS about how just messed up the whole situation was. The state of Illinois essentially has kind of messed up in their paperwork, and a lot of people didn't know that they needed to get an emissions test before they started until the last minute. And since today is the last day, you don't want to know it's the worst, waiting till the last minute. That happened. So, boo, woe is me, right? First world problems. Oh, I had to wait in line for my emissions test.
That's a real problem.
All right, well, we got a great show coming up tonight. Austin Goolsbee's coming on after the 7:30. Mike Patrician from, which I'm very excited, from Riot Fest will also be here. Also, we're going to have some up-to-the-minute, last-minute check-ins at Spring Session in Springfield. And, of course, we're going to play the worst. All that's coming up. After the break, we'll do the carryout. Stay with us. This is The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Let's go to the phones. Bobby D's got an answer for me. Bobby, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, it's about 3 o'clock this afternoon. I went out to get my coffee in the Trib and a red eye. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was the Trib or if it was when I went to the DNA Info website. Mm-hmm. But there was a little article in there that says, you know, you didn't have to go get your emissions test by today. You can just go get your sticker and they'll give it to you.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. But I have to say that if you don't do it before, like they're saying as of tomorrow, June 1st, I think for the June 1st people, you are essentially on the hook.
You probably have to grab the Tribune. I think it was the Tribune I saw it. Yeah. But
I don't know if you hear my regular segment. I read the newspaper, so you don't have to, but I guess I missed that one.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, it was kind of small. And I don't know if it was the Red Eye or the Trib.
If it's Red Eye, I didn't read Red Eye. I didn't take the bus today, Bobby.
Probably a little thing in the Trib. But anyway, it said that even though they weren't sending out the notices and, you know, it's supposed to have it by June 1st if you're a June 1st person, all you got to do is go.
I'll go down there tomorrow without the emissions and see what they do with me.
Go down to hell. Maybe you can just go down to the Secretary of State's special office and get it.
That's what I'm hoping. All right, Bobby. It was nice talking to you about our menial day-to-day business. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, Bobby. You know, I got another one here saying, I was in line today for a total of an hour and 10 minutes to get a 2-minute test. And all they did was plug it into a computer. I tried going on Saturday, but the line was almost to Route 59 and Eola Road in Naperville. Wow. Yeah, so that's, there you go. All right, well, I guess I missed the story on that. Might have been smart to read the newspaper this morning. But maybe that's a good segue to the carry out. This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. It's the final hours of the spring session in Springfield, or as I like to call it, the Dower Hour. Governor Rauner wants a short-term deal to keep the government afloat, but the Dems want to send him something that he doesn't like. You know, because politics. Will the working groups come up with a compromise? Will the governor approve new revenue? Will Mike Madigan finally get a cell phone? Tune in later for Broken State Government! It could replace Nashville. It'd be good. Some House Republicans stepped out of line and voted to override the Chicago police fire pension veto. So big loss for Governor Rauner, big win for Mayor Emanuel. Wasn't really good either way for us, the taxpayers. Essentially, we won't go broke next year, but probably soon thereafter. But everybody seems to be unhappy, so I guess it's a good deal. I just hope the lawmakers do something about the state pumpkin, because at 12 midnight, it turns back into a pumpkin. A whistleblower case against the police in the city was settled out of court, so now the mayor won't have to testify, which I know seems fishy since Emanuel wouldn't want to take the stand. But really? I mean, were we thinking that it would be great television to watch Emanuel on the stand? Let me finish. You're not letting me finish. Can I speak? That was my Emanuel. Donald Trump dropped a bombshell today. He hates the press. Say what? What a Shakespearean tale. Trump hates the press, but he loves press. He despises the lowlifes who write about him, but he calls them to get him to write about him. If the press didn't care about Donald, would the voters? Amazing. Also, very scary to have a presidential candidate talk about despising the press. But you know what? He can't really hurt the New York Times. They already have a wall built around them. A paywall. See what I did there? On the other side, it's quite possible, thanks again, time zones, that Hillary Clinton could wrap up the Democratic nomination before the polls close in California, making that primary moot. And that hurts Bernie Sanders, who is putting all his marbles, or mud balls, I'm not sure what he plays with, into winning California. When reached for comment, Hillary Clinton said, listen, I don't like to talk on the phone. Do you have an email address? Drew Peterson was convicted of trying to put a hit on a Will County prosecutor. Man, this dude. Who's this guy? What's going on? Can we talk about the Cincinnati Zoo? No? Has it been talked to death? I feel like it's been talked to death. Poor kid, poor gorilla, poor parents, poor Facebook feed. It kind of makes me wish that Beyonce was back in town. Too much gorilla talk, Facebook, and too much Beyonce in my Facebook feed, too. I mean, let's go. Please, Arietta, have a good game tonight. City officials are begging for civility and manners after the Memorial Day holiday left Chicago beaches littered with trash. What? Who doesn't pick up trash? What is this, 1975? You're not being asked to compost your garbage. Just put it in the trash bin. That's too hard? Are you that indignant? I ain't throwing this Dorito bag away. I'm an American. Obama can't force me to put trash in the trash. Attica! Attica! Come on, everybody! Let's throw all our garbage all over the place! Come on. Get it together, Chicago. Health officials are saying that the Rio Olympic Games should go on despite the Zika virus outbreak, or what I call new Ebola. The games are slated for August, so you know what I would do? If I were in this situation and I had any control whatsoever, I would release a swarm of mosquitoes during the 400 dash. Make everybody run just a little bit faster. Even better, during the interpretive dance part of the gymnastic routine. Just think about the moves. Well, this is a bummer. Remember your MySpace page? The early social media giant MySpace is still around, but most of us have abandoned our profiles. But have no fear. The company announced that the site has been hacked. And your information, even though you haven't been on that page for years, is probably part of it. Proving once again that the internet sucks. In weather, was beautiful. Then it had to up and rain like a jerk. Sucks that your roof got blown away, Willowbrook. In sports, the Cubs keep rolling along. What a weekend at Wrigley. Just winning like they don't know how to lose. They got the Dodgers again tonight, and it could be history for Jake Arrieta going for the 24th straight win. No, wait, he didn't get the win. The Cubs... I hate baseball math. The White Sox, on the other hand? Oh, my Lord, what happened in Kansas City this weekend? Lucky number 7, I guess. First, they gave up 7 runs in the bottom of the 9th to lose on Saturday. And then they coupled it with 7 losses in a row. Yikes, come on. No longer in first. The Sox are in third and currently out of a wild card spot. Personally, I blame it on the goofy camouflage Memorial Day uniforms, but turn it around, guys. In the NBA, how about the Golden State Warriors? Gots to give them credit for battling back. They may not be the best ever, but they have all the makings of a great basketball team. They know drama. And that's one of the key ingredients to any NBA winner. Now, Steph Curry versus LeBron James. How fun is that? All is right in the NBA again. You know what's not right? The NHL Stanley Cup. The Penguins of Pittsburgh are up 1-0 to the Sharks of San Jose. Just rolls off the tongue. And finally, a new diner in Wicker Park is replicating the diner from the show Saved by the Bell. It'll be called Saved by the Max, and it opens this week for 3 months. Its attention to detail is getting critical acclaim, but no word on whether a knife-wielding screech will be out front threatening customers. I think that would be a nice addition. Well, that's the carryout for May 31st, 2016. Hey, tomorrow's a new month, so we got that going for us. Pretty nice. Coming up, we're going to talk with Austin Goolsbee. He's a professor of economics at the Booth School of Business. His event tonight, Cut the Bull, Economics of the 2016 Presidential Race. We'll talk with him right after the news here on The Download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right. Rob Martier, did that shed get done?
It was like shoveling heavy, wet snow yesterday. See, the thing is with the old shed, it was in such a spot in the yard where it was literally sinking. So all of the joists, all of the support joists, all of the frame for the base was basically in mud. So I had to, you know, break up the floor.
Oh,
I had to pull that up. And then I had to...
Did you finish it or no?
Oh, yeah, it's done. It's
hey,
done.
All right. Can we have a shed party at some point?
Only when the new one is... We'll christen the new one.
Okay, good.
I'll have champagne. I'll, you know, break a bottle over the
exactly.
back corner.
And I thought about you with the Penguins. You know, getting off to a good start.
Sure.
And why not? You like that, huh?
Yeah. Well, I did predict they would take it. You know, so
you
they're playing all right, you know.
Well, since you're part of the show, we predicted...
That's correct.
Right.
Yes, we did predict.
Yeah, so we could put that on a billboard if they do win.
We did predict that. Yeah. So how was your weekend?
It was good, man. It was good. Except for the submissions.
I know.
Don't get me started.
That's a bummer.
So many people are sending in great texts and tweets and to try and help me. Essentially telling me to read the DNA info story.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. You know, hey, I can't catch them all, right?
No.
I should have, because this morning when I woke up early, I'm like, I'm going to get a jump on it. I'll be the first one in line. I showed up. I was like, wow, I've never seen it like this.
Yeah.
Is there something? Is there an outbreak? Is there some sort of virus that's hitting Chicago, and the only way for the vaccine is to get your emissions tested?
It's crazy.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, tonight, the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics is sponsoring an event called Cut the Bull, Economics of the 2016 Race. This will be a conversation between Stephen Moore from the Heritage Foundation and my next guest, Professor Austin Goolsbee. Goolsbee is a professor of economics at the Booth School of Business at the University of Chicago. He also was the economic advisor to President Obama and played a crucial role in the White House's response to the financial meltdown in the late 2000s. Tonight, it's my pleasure to welcome Professor Austin Goolsbee to The Download. Professor, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So let's talk about cutting the bull. I mean, you want to get back in the spotlight, so you're looking for an argument?
Well, Steve Moore and I are old buddies, and we're on opposite sides of the political spectrum, as it were. David Axelrod runs the Institute of Politics and is a friend, and they, you know, given how much attention the economy's gotten so far in the election, they wanted to kind of have a debate about it. So we both thought it would be a good idea.
You know, we've had conversations about the economy here on The Download and trying to figure out, you know, heads from tails. And a lot of times it feels like politics really can skewer one way or the other the way that the economy's going. Republicans will tell you it's going south. Democrats will say it's going north.
In fact, there's a guy here who did research. He done some academic research that basically backs up your view that from the day Barack Obama gets elected president, if you go look at the consumer confidence numbers, not anything. This is just asking the factual question, how do you think the economy is doing? Mm-hmm. That becomes, like everything else in the world, something that's, these days, I should add, that becomes something that's highly politicized. So Republicans, as soon as Obama's elected, they believe that the economy is doing terrible. And Democrats say, oh, the economy is recovering and doing well. So I think you're right.
Well, that's, Professor, you know, I mean, from your vantage point at the University of Chicago, where are we with the economy? I mean, obviously being an economic advisor to the Obama White House, you're biased a little bit. But where do you think we are with the economy in 2016?
I think we're modestly improving as we have been every year for the last 6 years, and not that fast, but not that slow. So I would definitely like it to be better. There are certainly weak spots, but overall, it's been a long-lived recovery. And in most recoveries, by this point, they're in recession again.
Right.
So I think every couple of years, if you look back, it's clear we're doing better than we were 2 years before. It's just that it's not growing fast enough that anybody says, yeah, this is what a boom feels like.
Right. Well, in your time at the White House, you were the economics spokesperson for the team. And you had the ability to sort of cut through as you're cut through the bull. But you were able to speak to the populace, not just to the market or the industry analysts, the people on the inside. What's the secret in talking about the economy to real people? See that it's obviously working for Donald Trump in the way that he's going one-to-one to people. What's the secret in your mind? Because you've been there before.
You know, that is an interesting, I guess in a way you're saying, was I like Donald Trump?
No,
holy
no,
cow,
no, no,
I
no.
hope course not. But you know, I tried to when I was in the White House, I tried very much to make the point about economics that this isn't some obscure thing about, you know, weird economic indicators, and it wasn't just of interest to the stock market. This is what really matters to everybody. It was their incomes, it was their jobs, it was their industries. And so I don't think it was that tough of a sell that the economy ought to be of general interest to everyone except my aunt. My aunt, every time you see my aunt Dinah, she says she became an accountant. She retired now, but every time I see her, she say, "Did I ever tell you how much I hated taking economics?" And I said, "Yeah, Tiny, you told me." I mean, I hated it. It didn't make any sense except for my aunt. You know, I don't think it's a tough sell. And I think Donald Trump has had a certain level of sophistication maybe that you highlight, which is he's just going to go out. His are not moored in the facts, in my opinion. You know, you just go out and say things that are just patently wrong, but in a way, because it's so visceral and because it's what some people want to hear, they're prone to run with it.
There really has been this sort of push in this race, especially between Secretary Clinton and Donald Trump, this idea of who can fix the economy. Secretary Clinton is part of the establishment, the politicians in Washington. He's an outsider. When you start talking about these things, when it's focused on the economy, what resonates about somebody coming in as an outsider? What is it about our politics and the way that the government works
you
that
know,
an outsider
I think
in the economy?
Yeah, that's a great way to think of it because, A, that's unusual. Usually in presidential elections by this point, I mean, you, in 2008, it was throughout the whole primary, but certainly by the time you get to the general, the historic answer to that question has been, well, it's all about what ideas the people are putting forward. And so the outsiders are coming in and they got new ideas and they're saying, here's what they want to do. In Trump's case, it hasn't really been that way. You know, he last week went out to California and he met with the farmers in California and they have a huge water problems and disputes in California. He announced the drought is a hoax. There is no drought. And if he's going to be the president, they're going to open the floodgates and everybody's going to have water. And that sort of thing, you know, I don't know if that's going to last. I could see why people would find his shtick entertaining so far, but I actually think when we get closer to the election, it's not going to I think his support is going to fade as people start actually thinking through what he's saying he wants to do.
Well, in the Democratic primary, there was a ton of rhetoric thrown around with Senator Sanders and Secretary Clinton about how attached the candidates were to the financial industry, to Wall Street.
Yes.
Talk about that, because are we getting to a point where, you know, politicians run the risk of being too close to the economy, or at least to the financial industry that
the financial industry, yeah. Probably. You know, you look out and you see how ridiculously much it costs to run for office. And then that should lead anybody to ask, well, who has that kind of money? And the answer is a lot of businesses, a lot of interests, and et cetera, are going to be making contributions. That's a thing that that Bernie Sanders really objects to. And I find that part of his program pretty admirable, you know, to object to the way that campaign financing is run.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, there's no way that Hillary Clinton could say, oh, you know what, I'm going to promise never to take any money from a super PAC, because then you're going to go to the general election and you know your opponent is going to have a super PAC and be funded by millions, if not billions of dollars. So they've gotten themselves into a bit of a unholy arms race, maybe,
yeah,
which involves big money and big industry, and I don't see how we get that out of our politics, because that's been a 100 years in the making development, and the last 5 or 10 years have made it worse with some of the Supreme Court decisions that allow even more than we did before. But you know, this thing's been growing for a long time.
Yeah. You know, reading your story, it's fascinating to be an economic advisor and to be in the White House at the time you were in. You know, we're talking about right when President Obama.
Like a nightmare.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But I want to ask you about that. Like, what was it like? I mean, Veep this week just on Sunday was kind of teasing around the idea of a president around, you know, a financial meltdown. But you were kind of in the middle of it. So
yeah,
for you,
how does it work? I talked to the writers of Veep some months ago about this, and in essence they were asking, well, what is it like, and what choices does the president have? The thing is, I'm not kidding, it really was basically a nightmare. We'd be coming to work. The good news was, when you woke up in the morning, you didn't have to be asking yourself, you know, well, who cares about what we're doing? And it's not like being an academic, you know, I'm writing a paper and only 30 people are going to read this paper. Every day we're waking up and coming down there and thinking, like, man, if we mess up today, we're going to be in the Depression. And so I found it very stressful. That said, it was really inspiring to see, you know, how many people through that crisis were willing to just dedicate an unbelievable amount of time and just, you know, do the best job they could do to try to get us out of that. And there were many meetings where, you know, because the stakes were real high, there were a lot of contentious meetings. And I remember at several of them thinking, like, thank God the president is the guy who has to decide this stuff, because if it goes wrong, he's going to be blamed, you know, but he deserves a lot of the credit that, you know, for whatever anybody wants to say now, and that the growth should be faster or they would like to address some weaknesses in the economy. I mean, if you back up the clock to the beginning of 2009, there was a very real chance that we were about to go into the Depression. And the fact that we didn't, I think historians are going to look back and view that as a signal accomplishment, because it was a really the blows that the economy took running up to the beginning of 2009 were really epic, as big as the ones in 1929.
Let me ask you this, as from your perch now at the University of Chicago, not in the White House, when you look at, you know, some of the indicators, housing, some of the other, the way that our municipalities, we're just here in Chicago, are having trouble with debt and pensions, is there a rosy outlook in the near future? Do you see repeating what happened in 2008, 2009? Because you hear so many people in the tech sector and the housing sector warn that, hey, we're just doomed to repeat the mistakes we made before. Are we moving away from that, or are we moving towards it?
Is there a rosy scenario for the near future? I don't think there is a rosy scenario. I think the Fed and other forecasters have been overly optimistic for seven straight years, quarter after quarter, projecting, oh, starting next year, we're going to be growing 3.5%, and we're going to raise the rates, and everything's going to be fine. And we've never gotten up to that. We've been growing about 2% a year, which, as I said at the beginning, that's okay, but it's not great. So I don't foresee a takeoff. But for the people saying they're foreseeing a real financial crisis again, that I think is unlikely for the U.S. at least. You know, if we talk about China or Europe, then you could make a case that they might be overdue for something worse. But I think in the U.S., you can call it a blessing, you can call it a curse. We're in this pretty steady growth that's been plugging along, not very fast, but not very slow.
Professor Austin Goolsbee is a professor of economics at the Booth School of Business at the University of Chicago. He's going to be part of the event tonight, Cut the Bull, Economics of the 2016 Race. Professor Goolsbee, thanks for joining me tonight. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 9 o'clock, we're going to check in with Springfield, Senator Heather Stein, Senator Mike McConley, Representative Ron Sandak, and Representative Will Gazzardi. They're going to join us to give us an update on the waning hours of the spring session. They're done with the spring session as of midnight. So we'll see if a budget gets passed or what's happening. We'll check in next hour. And then coming up at 10 o'clock, the worst. 312-981-7200. It's Tuesday night, I know. We usually do it on Monday, but we're changing it to Tuesday. Holiday weekend, and I like it. Might actually be a programming change. I'm kind of like the Brandon, was it Tartikoff? Brandon Tartikoff of the Download. We'll just switch it around. We'll try it after Friends, see what happens. Tonight, Dave Hellum and Erica Reed are my guests, comedians. It's going to be a great time. 312-981-7200. Well, coming up in September, Riot Fest will take over Douglas Park for a weekend of live music. This past week, it was reported that Morrissey will be the headliner, along with Def Cab for Cutie, Social Distortion, the original lineup of the Misfits, Ween, Nas, several more. I could do that. I could just do that the whole hour. The festival welcomes about 150,000 people to Douglas Park on the city's west side. This was the big story last summer as the festival moved from Humble Park after some in the neighborhood complained and the alderman withdrew support. But they found a new home in Douglas Park, and the festival continues to be one of the biggest music festivals in town, second only to Lollapalooza. And not only that, but over the years, the festival has expanded to Denver, Toronto, and other major cities. It's added carnivals and rodeos, too. Riot Fest was founded by Mike Patrician, and he's my guest tonight at the big table. Mike, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to meet you. All right, so Morrissey, I think we'll start there. I put out the question today. I'm like, what should we talk about with Riot Fest? And everybody's like, is Morrissey or is Morrissey not coming to?
Morrissey is playing 100%. So there's never a doubt.
He essentially would he come out and say, I'm not playing in
Riot Fest? It was a fan site that kind of stated that, you know, as of May 23rd, Morrissey was no longer playing Riot Fest. And it kind of blew up from there, and within like 20 minutes, it was like kind of Rolling Stone and Consequence of Sound and everything. You know, it was more of a kind of a headache than anything else, but there was no doubt that he was playing.
Okay, so for a punk rock festival like Riot Fest, Morrissey is a little bit of a departure, but a tremendous get. Talk about the idea of booking Morrissey and the execution of it.
Yeah, I mean, when we started out in 2005, it was strictly kind of a punk rock festival. And then, you know, especially when we moved outside in Chicago in 2012, you know, we expanded it. But, you know, Morrissey comes from that background. You know, when he was a kid, he was going to see The Clash, The Pistols, The Stranglers, and mm-hmm. so on and so forth, and had a fond appreciation for Blondie, and he still does. I mean, even as of a couple weeks ago, when he was in Los Angeles during Coachella week, he went to see Rancid play at an underplay, you know, in L.A. That's, you know, he's a pretty authentic guy. I mean, he is Morrissey, and, you know,
it's amazing,
temperamental at times, but, you know, I've worked with him before, and, you know, the show was amazing. So, you know, this is kind of the postscript to it, I suppose.
Well,
you know,
the lineup, as I just mentioned, I mean, Death Cab for Cutie, Social Distortion, the original lineup of the Misfits.
Correct.
I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean, what are we talking about? Over 100 acts on the lineup?
Yeah, it's probably like about, when it's all going to be said and done, about 125.
125. What goes into, I mean, for this year, what goes into booking that festival? I mean, obviously, to get 125 acts, and I would say almost all of them with some sort of name recognition. I mean, it just seems like it's almost impossible.
Yeah, we get that often. I think in the festival, you know, world in North America has changed so much, even since when we went outside a few years back. And you look at a lot of the big guns and ones that have been either sold off to like Live Nation or AEG, it's super homogenous, you know. And as one of the last independent festivals in the U.S. right now, the way we separate ourselves is by the booking, mm-hmm. mostly. You know,
you pride yourself on that.
Yeah, I mean, it initially came out of necessity where, you know, you wouldn't get calls back from agents or managers in the early years. They, you know, wouldn't give us the time of day. And then something started happening where bands started respecting it, even when it was in the clubs. They were like, hey, this is something we want to do because it's who we are, you know, we came from this, or it's a cool look, whatever. And they started putting pressure on their managers and agents to, like, hey, let's do this thing. And so when we took it outside, You know, I mean, it was a really well-kept secret. Nobody knew that we were going to do it. And you come out with, like, Elvis Costello and Iggy and Rise Against. And, you know, it seems like, like 20 years ago, you know, it was like, what, 4 or 5 years ago? It definitely, people started viewing the fest differently.
Well, I mean, you mentioned it being independent. Did you have trouble, you know, breaking through? Because that's the big thing about the homogenous nature of the music business, especially the event business, is there are only a couple companies, and they make these sort of relationships with management and agents, and they're like, you're going to work with me, and they almost corner the market. How difficult is it to be independent in a game with companies like Live Nation?
I mean, it's always a chess match. I mean, I think, you know, we look at it differently. I think when you're a publicly traded company, it's market share. Right, that's what it bottom line comes down to. And you know, whoever's booking, even though they do a great job on festivals and mm-hmm. so on and so forth, we're not doing it for market share. This is kind of who we are. And I think if I've learned anything, is I kind of ignore all the kind of white noise surrounding, you know, whether or not we have crosshairs on us because, you know, we're dipping into their business or what have you. But you know, we have skin in the game, and their bookers don't. And I think that means something.
You know, it is obviously the idea of this being born out of a punk rock aesthetic mm-hmm. and doing it here in Chicago. There's some correlation to the fact that this is a punk rock town. There is this sort of, there is a feel to it. You're not, you know, we do respond almost to an authentic festival or an independent festival more than we do, say, you know, a corporate festival.
Yeah. I grew up in Buffalo, which is kind of as a rust belt as you get. And when I was kind of making a decision of where to move in 2002, one of the reasons why I chose Chicago was primarily because the people kind of reminded me of back home. Even though this is a monster city, right, in comparison to Buffalo, there's this commonality of, like, you work hard, you're true to yourself, you're authentic, you know, and you can get somewhere. And quite honestly, I don't think Riot Fest would have worked anywhere else. You know, it was like perfect timing, mm-hmm. you know, in part. And also, I think the punk rock scene in Chicago, which is far superior to most cities around the world, was never truly recognized. So I kind of, like, even in a way, took it upon myself to make sure that people everywhere knew. Mm-hmm. And everybody associates Riot Fest with Chicago punk rock, which is more than I could ever ask for.
Mike Patrician is the founder of Riot Fest. We're talking about the festival, which is coming to Chicago in September. It's going to be at Douglas Park. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Love to get your story of you know, before you took it outside, what mm-hmm. what the original thought was, and get a little bit more background on you, and talk about community. I mean, obviously, you weren't expecting to make news headlines with where your festival was going to be. When that happened last year, we'll talk about that too. Stay with us here on The Download. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest at the big table tonight, Mike Patrician. He's the founder and I would say co-partner of Riot Fest, which is going to be hitting Douglas Park coming up this fall. It also has a show in Denver as well. And this festival has become so wildly popular. I mean, to get 150,000 people through Douglas Park, I mean, that's, you're not just sort of, you know, doing face painting and balloons. This is a huge enterprise that is only second to Lollapalooza in the city of Chicago. Let's talk about your roots because, you know, you said you came from Buffalo.
Correct.
Talk about, what were you into? What kind of music were you into in Buffalo?
I mean, I got into punk rock really early on. I want to say like fifth grade. I think fourth grade, I got kind of my first Sex Pistols cassette completely dubbed. And I think that kind of put it in my Walkman and put me to sleep for a good 2 years. So my mind was easily corrupted. Like picking up the dictionary, looking, you know, what anarchy meant. And from there, you know, I got into a lot of hip hop, a lot of ska and reggae, and, you know, hardcore, a little bit of metal. But it was mostly indie, you know, like college rock or whatever, you know, how it was termed between like 89 and probably 96, mm-hmm. you know, I was really into it. You know, there's, as long as it, I'm a sucker for melodies. So, you know, more whoa woes and things like that I'm into.
When you came to Chicago, how long did it take you before you said, okay, I'm going to, I want to contribute to the music community here. I want to start booking stuff.
It was 2 years. It was less than 2 years.
Did you come to Chicago with that goal?
No.
What'd you come here for?
I was working on my PhD, and I just became jaded and pretty much disenfranchised with what I was doing and just didn't want to do it anymore. You know, I was in academia for a long time, and it was just soulless, and it wasn't like no redeeming quality. I loved it, you know, still, no matter what, like the teaching aspect of it, I loved. But there were a lot of politics involved, and it just wasn't the right fit at that time. So, you know, I was never in the music business, and I just thought, you know, let me maybe get back to my roots a little bit, and wouldn't it be great if I had all my favorite bands playing together.
How does one do that, though? I mean, I'm fascinated, like, when, you know what, I'm done with this PhD, I'm out, I'm going to book some stuff. You know, who's my favorite band?
Yeah, it really happened like that.
I'll book them.
I was at work when I was thinking of names for a possible festival. And I was scribbling down stuff, and then I wrote Riot, and I'm like, that's kind of tongue-in-cheek and funny, because there's just really no riots at punk rock shows anymore. And from there, I started contacting bands, and, you know, 95% of them said no or didn't respond, but a few did. And, you know, that first year, we did two nights at the Congress Theater, did less than 2,000 people. And I swear I'd never do it again.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. That was exactly my next question. When you were done with the first one, you only got 2,000 people. I was still a good number of people. But
no,
the Congress Theater is a big place.
Yeah.
But, you know, to be there for the first effort, something that you weren't you were passionate about, but it wasn't necessarily your career. What kept you going? What made you say, let's try it again?
It was several months later. So I swore it off. I'm like, it's just not worth the stress. You know, you take everything upon yourself, everything, and me just being green, you know, like I was taken advantage of by a few agents just because I didn't know what I was doing. Fast forward 3 months after that, I think the first one was like November 4 and 5 of 2005. I think by January, I was like, I kind of missed it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the Naked Ray Gun talk first occurred. It was like John Babin, who was the manager of the Effigies, another amazing Chicago punk rock band, who played in 2005, and I did a couple club shows with them. He's the one who's like, you should do it, you should pursue it. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, I pushed this, sent some emails, no response from anybody. I'm like, oh, okay. And this is like, you know, back in the day of MySpace. And then I get a message from Eric Spicer from Naked Ray Gun being like, hey, would you be interested in maybe having Naked Ray Gun play Raya Fest? And my mind just exploded. I didn't think it was real. And, you know, it was. And probably the most important moment of Raya Fest was having Naked Ray Gun. To this day, was having Naked Ray Gun.
So that sort of everything. Like, that changed it for you. That was the moment where you realized that there was something in it that was beyond just work and the blood, sweat, and tears, putting it to stage and being like, huh.
100%. And it made me realize, because I was still like, what, 25 or something? Around there, 25, 26. Really young. And to see a band that I respected so much, they were human. It changed my perspective on everything. And, you know, even though I still hold those guys on a pedestal, they were so Chicago, so authentic, so great. Everyone, such a different personality that I think it helped me land reunions afterwards. Because
so other bands who had the same experiences with Naked Ray Gun, and they knew they were cool, and they knew that, you know, if they trusted you, that they could trust you, that kind of thing.
And that's when, you know, is also, that was a year when, you know, people were, I mean, I didn't even look where people were coming from that year, like on ticket sales, but, you know, there's people flying in from Japan and Russia, and I'm like, holy smokes.
And more,
like,
tickets are being sold. And
yeah,
you're
across
seeing a difference.
The world. Yeah. I'm like, well, maybe we're onto something here. You know, but still, even after 06, it was a year-to-year thing. You know, it wasn't until Sean, my partner Sean McHugh, got involved that it became super real. He was, you know, the one who really believed in it and allowed me to make mistakes.
Well, let me ask you, because when it went to outdoor, and we'll skip a couple years here, but when you start, when Sean came in and there was really a movement to make it bigger.
Yeah.
Talk about the scale, because the one thing that I find really interesting about you and about Riot Fest is it did go from a couple club shows to 100 bands on stage in Humboldt Park, right. You know, and bands that, I mean, just the top five, you're like, how did he get those together? I mean, that's amazing that the lineups are so strong. Was there ever a talk with you and your business partners about scale, saying, you know what, this might just be too ambitious, Mike. This might be too much.
Not really. I mean, it was such an organic process. Like, even, you know, last year we were inside in 2011, it was 5 days long and like 30 some club shows within that, you know, time. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we were still doing, if you count up everybody at the shows, you're still doing 30,000 people. So the problem with doing it in the clubs, how we were doing it, was we were really cannibalizing our audience, right? So you'd have like four shows going on at the same time. And if you wanted to catch somebody at Metro and at Congress at the same time, good luck.
Right.
It's not like Austin where you can just walk to the next place. And I was the one who was initially against taking it outside.
Well, why were you against it?
It was comfortable, even though it was like logistically crazy to
you
get
knew
all
the clubs,
on the
you knew
same,
the
but,
you knew indoors, like you knew you didn't have any experience of going outdoors.
And it seems like everybody else was already doing it. I'm like, well, there's already Lowell in town. You know, it was kind of a weird moment. But Sean saw a vision for it, and he kind of said, he's like, you know, if you don't want to, we won't. But if we do it. If we do go outside, let's make it different than everything else. And I think that kind of opened up my eyes a little, where I just saw a different kind of canvas. And the most important thing was people wouldn't be conflicted of when to go. You right. know, like you could just walk to a different stage, you know, instead of going through all the clubs and stuff, which was super hard.
You mentioned at the beginning, you mentioned about being green and how difficult it was in that first year at the Congress. How was the transition going to Humboldt Park, the idea of being in charge of the official Riot Fest Chicago, where, you know, now you're on par with the Pitchforks and the Lollapaloozas? Did any of that sort of...
It was scary. I remember an hour before we announced, I mean, I was nerves. The anxiety that was kind of running through my body was, I don't think I've had an experience since like that. So I was just worried, like, because everything I've worked, you know, I've worked for, Sean's worked for X amount of years, could it all go away, you know, in a matter of seconds if it didn't pop.
Yeah, if nobody wants it
and
or nobody
it,
shows.
It did pop.
Right.
And it was like, I remember just looking how people reacted to it. It was probably one of the most memorable moments I've had in kind of like, I guess, my professional career. That's what you're going to call it. but then we realized we were onto something, and our fans are the best. I mean, they're so loyal. They'll fight for us. And it's, you know, the timing, it's all about timing. And the timing for Riot Fest, even though part of me, like, completely is well aware that I needed Riot Fest more than Riot Fest needed to be created, if that makes any amount of sense.
Sure.
It filled a huge void in my life. It gave me a purpose I didn't have, or I lost when I moved here. But we were kind of hedging our bet a little bit that there was other people who were outside of the mainstream a little bit who would latch on. And it might take a little bit longer. Because, I mean, you know, you look at 2005, what an important year it is in Chicago. It's like first year of Lolla, first year of Pitchfork, first year of Riot Fest. We all started in the same year, and the trajectories are just so different.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, let's continue the conversation. We'll take a break for the news. Mike Patrician's my guest. He's the founder of Riot Fest, which is going to be in Douglas Park September 15, 16, 17. Did I get that right? Coming up here. And also, there's a Riot Fest in Denver. We'll continue the conversation. I want to talk to you about community. is a big part of what we've what we've had to read in the newspapers about Riot Fest in the last year or so. Mike Patrician's my guest here at the big table. Stick around. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Mike Patrician. He's the founder of Riot Fest. Riot Fest is going to be in Douglas Park the weekend of the 15th, 16th, and 17th of September. Also, before that, it's going to be in Denver. It's expanded over the years. It's done a lot of great things, Mike. And one of the things that it really grabbed headlines for was last year the switch from Humble Park to Douglas Park. Humble Park, obviously, they're pretty similar in size, but the news got hold that some of the residents of Humble Park were complaining about the fringe aspects of any festival when 150,000 people come into a neighborhood. The aldermen seemed to withdraw support, and you guys were thinking about leaving Chicago.
Correct. You know, no matter what, if you're a festival named Riot Fest, and you know, something happens where you're battling it out with an alderman, you know, it's going to be media frenzy, just so sexy. I get it. And there was so much misinformation that was kind of going out last year. And, you know, to most of the media's credit, I suppose, people were reading it. You're going to write about it, right? But the stress it put on us and, you know, staff and everything like that, I would, you know, never want to put in, even my worst enemy in that position.
Well, there was a lot of talk about, you know, again, it rained in 2014, so there was a lot of damage to the park because 150,000 people with a ton of rain. But it's echoed the concerns that Chicagoans have about Lollapalooza, which is in Grant Park. When it ripped up, who's paying for it?
Right.
Now we don't have access to the park, and it's probably exacerbated a little bit being in a community.
Correct.
In the middle of a park. For you as a festival organizer, how much do you think about those things? How much do you think about how you're seen and how you're viewed in a neighborhood?
Well, I mean, you know, up to, you know, when it was finally announced that we're leaving Humboldt, our relationship with the community was second to none. Nobody was doing it better. I mean, everybody from Chicago Mag to everybody was, you know, talking how we went into the neighborhood, which I live in. And I mean, seriously, I live five houses down from where the entrance was for Riot Fest. So I had more than invested interest about Humble Park and that community. But I think more importantly is, like, you know, we got kind of the Douglas Park was, we were kind of thrown into it pretty quick. And the relationships that we built in Humble Park over the years, we're, you know, now doing in Douglas, right? Mm-hmm. And it's important that we leave something behind that resonates, you know? So even as of last week, and you know, Sean was heading it up, I mean, you know, part of the problems with, it was in Humboldt and in Douglas too, is that these parks were built on marshes. It was unusable land to build. So they're super low-lying. And compounded with the issues of drainage and, you know, little hangers, when it rains, it just becomes, mm-hmm. There's nothing you can do. You could throw seed on there and turf every single day. It's just not going to grow it's just always flooded.
I'm assuming you learned a lot about landscape in the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah. I sure did. But, you know, we were out there even last week and start leveling out the ground, raising it, you know, and little things like that where people, you know, especially the residents of North Lawndale and surrounding areas will see the impact and all the beautification efforts that we have kind of going on as well, outside of just cleaning up garbage or what have you.
There's been a lot made about sustainable growth for mm-hmm. Riot Fest. And even Jim DeRogatis wrote about why not take Riot Fest, or he would say the same to Lollapalooza, but why not invest in the city in a place where festivals happen, as opposed to going into 100-year, you know, the very ancient sort of parks, as you just mentioned, with drainage issues. They weren't designed to necessarily house 150,000 people at a time. What's your thought on that? What's your thought about, you know, finding the right place for Riot Fest to be?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's an argument to be had on both sides, 100%. Jim's right in that there's huge infrastructure problems with a lot of Chicago, you know, parks. The problem is the state, the county nor the city have money to do it, right? So between, you know, us paying our rental fees and doing, you know, other things like investing. I mean, listen, we essentially returfed the entire, or receded then in as of past week, even returfed soccer fields and stuff like that to the tune of like $200,000+, right? Otherwise, that would have never happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, the grass at Douglas Park, there parts of it were just lush and beautiful, but there's other parts because of how it was just low lying, just crabgrass. I mean, it's just weeds, right?
Mm-hmm. So, public, there's a public Chicago park, right?
Right. It's not like the state is, or the city is going to, you know, invest. I mean, they have their own financial problems right now, and unfortunately, the Chicago Park District, you know, they depend on this stuff to a certain extent.
There's been a lot made of what's happened with the Lucas Museum on the front, mm-hmm. Or on the lakefront, you know, the Friends of the Park, and this has really been a huge issue. But the issue is similar to the issue with Riot Fest, is that the parks weren't necessarily made for a festival to come in and for to charge big money and to have people come in that aren't from that community, use it and leave. That's not the plan of the city of Chicago. They're supposed to be open and free. Where do you, as a smart guy and very articulate when it comes to issues of community, where do you stand on that philosophy, the idea of the way that Chicago was built and the idea of how we use our parks?
I think if there's money in it, it's hard to separate the park from the community, number one, because, you know, person who lives a couple of blocks down from, you know, Douglas Park or Humboldt Park
or Grant Park, or anything like that.
You know, they have a fondness of that park, right? And it's our responsibility to be essentially good tenants and good neighbors is to add to that. A lot of these parks are in complete disarray in terms of the infrastructure's bad. Roads are crumbling. Curbs are non-existent now because there's just no money to do it. And if we could come in and help with that stuff, you know, even if we're not in Douglas Park in 2 to 3 years, whatever, you know,
but while
that
you're
stuff's
there,
gonna,
right,
exactly.
Right.
You know, because no matter what, we also need a suitable venue. And, you know, Chicago, like many other cities in the U.S., they rent out their parks for festivals.
Right.
You know, and it's not like we're doing anything like illegal or, you know, odd or, you know, breaking precedent or what have you. You know, we're not. You know, I mean, some parks in Chicago were completely built for the World's Fair, so they were built for events. It's just unfortunate that, you know, a lot of them haven't had any infrastructure since then.
Well, let's talk about, I mean, one of the prevailing issues that we see in neighborhoods like Humboldt Park are the G word, gentrification.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a feel that a festival like Riot Fest brings 150,000 people, almost all not from Humboldt Park, into the area, you know, they're going to cause traffic headaches and for the moment, and that stuff goes. But it also has a positive impact on the businesses that surround the park. But the idea being that, you know, people in that neighborhood or who feel like they have ownership of that neighborhood, they feel like maybe what you're doing is bringing people here and they're gonna like what they have, they're gonna take it, and the property taxes are gonna go up, that kind of thing. Do you think about that, about gentrification and Riot Fest?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I think it's the proof's in the pudding. You look at the festival and what it is. We're super conscious of we're one of the most affordable festivals in the world. You know, we understand this is not VIP Cabana Festival. We're not booking, you know, Skrillex. we're booking the Misfits. I mean, there's, you know, and anybody who wants to take me a task on gentrification and losing culture, you know, you're talking to somebody who grew up in a 100% Ukrainian household, who understands culture better than anybody. I spoke Ukrainian before I spoke English. So it doesn't matter if, you know, in Humboldt Park, where it's predominantly Puerto Rican, where you have a culture in Douglas Park, there's a Latino segment and an African-American segment. I understand this stuff. And I am, number one, the biggest cheerleader for independent businesses. And would I want a local record store in Humboldt Park to go away? Of course not. Or a restaurant to be replaced by Starbucks? not in a million years. If anything, I'm the one who's going to fight against it. So, you know, when this whole gentrification thing came about as an argument last year, we turned from grass to gentrification with the alderman last year. It's you know, it was a cop out. It's weak.
For you, I mean, you were able to find a suitable replacement for Humboldt Park quickly, you know, and there was, like, we started this talk about, you know, you were thinking about leaving Chicago. Is there a way, I mean, because you've done stuff in Toronto and Philadelphia and you're still in Denver, is there a way that Riot Fest, you know, outgrows Chicago?
No. No. As long as we have a suitable venue here, we have support, and that, you know, truth be told, we're us and Pitchfork when it comes to independent music. I mean, we're as Chicago as it gets, you know. I mean, it's great that Lala's here, brings so much, you know, brings a ton of tourism, brings a lot of eyes on Chicago or what have you. But hey, listen, it's a corporation owned by Live Nation. And we're proud we're from Chicago. We're proud of the diversity. And, you know, it doesn't matter. How I look at it is this. Bottom line is that there's room for something like Riot Fest to remain in Douglas Park or any kind of community park for years to come. But we have to do our part. We have to prove ourselves every single year that we're good for the community, right? And we don't have the answers to everything. We never said we did, you know, and we know, you know, with Riot Fest, there becomes noise pollution, you know, and as my buddy Max once said, we're certainly not handing out Bibles at Riot Fest. So, but at the same time, our fans are great, and versus probably every other festival in North America, they're smart, they're savvy. They're not causing any major issues.
Right.
You know, there was one arrest at Riot Fest last year, and it was a wife wailing on her husband because he started acting a fool and decided he wanted to relive his youth and stage dive or something. And she swung at him and actually hit an off-duty cop who was doing security. I mean, that's like, yeah, it's comical. Right, right. I feel bad. Like, I found out about it like a couple weeks afterwards. They were like from Seattle or something. But, you know, I look at Douglas in the same manner as Humboldt Park. We're willing to have conversations. I know Sean has been at it every single day while I was like building the lineup and all that kind of stuff. And he took a lot of it, you know, put it on his own shoulders, and he's done a wonderful job.
Okay, let's get back to the music as we wrap up here. I mean, the original lineup of the Misfits.
Yeah.
You know, and you mentioned that, and your face lights up, and you even mentioned about the music, and that's kind of why I asked you what you were into. The things that you were into as a kid and growing up, from the Sex Pistols to hip-hop to reggae to whatever it is, it's really, you can see it in the lineups. The original lineup of the Misfits, this was not sort of a light bulb that went off a month ago.
No, no. So the first time I did... So people who don't know, Glenn Danzig was the original singer and founder, songwriter for the Misfits. They had other incarnations kind of start in the late 90s and still to this day. But Glenn, Jerry, and Doyle haven't stepped on stage together it's been 33 years. But my first show with Glenn was in 2010 at the Congress Theater on the Black is the Black tour. And I don't think I've ever told the story publicly, but it was a really great show. He had a great time, and they stayed at the venue until like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't want the runner. I felt bad. It was like Sunday night. I was like, you know, I'll drive Glenn back to his hotel, right?
Right.
So he had to like fly back to LA on his day off or something. So
you're like, you guys clean up here. I'll take care.
Right.
I'll take care of Glenn. Right.
I drove him back to the hotel, and he's like sitting in the back, right? So I'm like looking at my rearview mirror, and I, you know, I'm like the opposite Danzig fan. I started with Danzig solo first. I didn't get into the Misfits
until later.
Yeah, you know, and so I'm like, we're just talking, kind of like, you know, talking about Chicago and stuff like that. And I don't know what it's at Cicero. I'm getting off at Cicero, and he kind of looked around. He's like, man, this place has really changed. I remember being here in like 1985. And wow, it's changed so much. And I'm like, oh yeah, 85 when Samhain, his other band, played the Metro. So I have like a bootleg of it. And then it like dawned on me. I'm like, oh my God, I just like did a nerd moment, you know, I'm like, oh. So he, I think he smiled, and the one thing led to another. And then the following year, we did the Danzig Legacy thing, which was all three aspects of his career. Basically, his first four albums of the solo career, a Samhain reunion, and then Doyle went on stage and did a Misfits. You know, that was wow. Like, yeah. And that turned into a proper Samhain reunion on their 30th anniversary. And, you know, and I've worked with Jerry on with the Misfits, too, because the very, very, very first Raya Fest, the Misfits played.
So this is, I mean, this is years in the making to get this reunion back
together.
Yeah,
you know, it's been kind of in talks for a couple of years. But one thing I've learned with reunions, whether it be the Misfits or the Replacements or Naked Ray Gun, the band has to be 100% into it. If it's not, it's not worth doing, right? I'm only a platform. Right. But I think for stuff like this, it's the best platform in the world.
Mike Patrician is the founder of Riot Fest. It's going to be at Douglas Park this September. A huge lineup, headliner being Morrissey, Death Cab for Cutie, and of course, the original lineup of the Misfits. Mike, congratulations on your success.
Thank
and thanks
you.
For being my guest tonight. The Big
Anytime. Take. Thanks.
That's right. Bob Mould will be at Riot Fest as well. It is. It's amazing. It's amazing how many bands. I mean, 125 acts, 150,000 people through Douglas Park. And, you know, something to be said about the idea that a lot of people, I mean, you go the other way. I asked about gentrification, but a lot of people who are going to Riot Fest may not be the kind of people who are going to explore the city of Chicago. And getting a chance to see different parts of the city, like Douglas Park, which they've never been in before, that's good for the businesses there. That's good for just getting to sort of, you know, get outside of the comfort zone. It's not at Wrigley. That's fascinating. I mean, it's really interesting. I liked his take on, you know, it's sometimes, you know, the news articles sort of speak for everybody. But to hear him talk about the issues like gentrification, the use of public parks, things like that, I think that's awesome to have someone like Mike at the helm. So that's good. Riot Fest coming up in September. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to check in Springfield. What's happening? I think they're still working. Only got 3 hours. We've got 3 hours. I feel like it's an episode of 24. Boom, 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 boom. Doo-doo-doo-sh. What's going to happen? Except it's budgets. But it's doomsday. Could be doomsday. We'll talk with, okay, we're going to try to do this, Pete. I've got Senator Staines, Senator Connolly, Representative Sandek, and Representative Ghisardi. And we're going to try to go boom, 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 boom on both sides of the House, both sides of the aisle. What do you think?
I'll get the timer ready.
I'm not going to be able to do it. They're lawmakers. They're politicians. You think they're going to be fast and snappy? I feel like I could be like an Anderson Cooper, like, next. Thank you very much, Senator Staines. Let's make a turn to Senator Connolly from Wheaton. Senator Connolly, tell me about, like, I can't do that. It would be great. We're going to see if we could do it. Coming up. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we're going to play the worst. 312-981-7200. You know what's the worst? Waiting in line to get your emissions checked. Ah, such a long line today. You know what? I blame myself. You know what's worst? Last minute. Being a last minute guy. I shouldn't have waited. So now I'm street. I'm not necessarily street legal. We're going to figure that out a little later. This hour, though, let's check in with Springfield. Obviously, tonight, the lawmakers down in Springfield, both the House and the Senate, are in session trying to sort of burn the midnight oil as we get close to the last couple hours of the spring session. We got to find out, are we going to have a budget by midnight? We will, or we will not. We'll see. We start tonight in the state Senate, where the House's budget bill is currently waiting for a vote. Heather Staines is a Democrat state senator representing the north side of Chicago, and she joins me now. Senator Staines, thanks for being with me tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so right now I'm accurate in saying that the House bill is still waiting for a vote. Do you expect to vote on it soon?
No, it doesn't have a vote. I will not get called for a vote tonight. On the floor at the moment, right now in the Senate, we have called for a vote in kindergarten through 12th grade education, budget allotted.
So the budget that was passed by the House, that was the big one that everyone was up in arms about, that was unbalanced. That's stalled. That's not going to be voted on in the Senate.
That's correct. We are not going to vote on it.
Interesting. So now then it does seem like you're going to do appropriations for education and for government spending?
Just education. The vote we have right now, that's really being debated on the floor as we speak here on the radio, it's being debated on the floor in the Senate, is just K through 12 budget.
Okay. For you, as a Democrat senator, is this? Do you like this? Is this something that you wish you could balance a budget, or does this seem like a good compromise in the waning hours of the spring session?
Well, I believe certainly sending a message that we know we need to keep our schools open. I think the Senate President last Friday had suggested, seeing the way this seemed to be going, where we weren't going to get to an overall compromise with a complete budget solution that would include, spending side, additional revenue, and some of the reforms the governor's been seeking. He had proposed on Friday that we do a stopgap budget. That was not at the moment taken up by either the governor or the speaker. Mm-hmm. Today, this morning, the governor came back with the notion of, yes, we should do a stopgap budget.
Right.
There was a general sense among the leaders that that might be a good way of going, and I'm hopeful that the budgeteers from all four caucuses and the governor's office will get together and negotiate a more complete stopgap budget.
Are you concerned as someone who's now been in Springfield for a while that you had this time in the spring session to get something done and you're going to come away with maybe some funding for K through 12, but really empty-handed to the Illinois people that no budget was decided upon?
Absolutely. I think it's just wrong going this long without a complete budget solution. We have social service agencies who have been closing up shop, people thus not getting services. We have high school kids being told, look elsewhere outside of our universities here in Illinois because we don't have a complete budget. This is creating real harm for real people across the state. We need a complete budget solution. I think it's there to be had. Everyone come together in good faith and trust to develop an overall solution. And I'm certainly hoping that not getting a complete budget tonight will help us redouble our efforts on doing a complete solution.
Well, it wasn't all for naught. I mean, you obviously, I just got the press release that you were able to push through some legislation about lead in water. Talk about that.
Yes, well, we all know from Flint, Michigan, what happened there, that lead in water is a real problem. Here in Illinois, there was a USA Today report that indicated that some of our schools that have been tested have shown high levels of lead in water in school. Chicago Public Schools has voluntarily done some testing and found some high levels of lead in some schools. So there's a clear problem here. So the bill is addressing that and ensuring that we will do testing for school buildings that are at risk of having lead, meaning buildings that were built before 1986 when lead pipes were no longer allowed. To be used.
Senator Staines, Heather Staines is the Democrat who represents the north side of Chicago. Senator Staines, thanks for taking a couple seconds out to talk to us tonight from Springfield.
Great. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, Justin.
There you go. Heather Staines, she represents Edgewater, Uptown, those kind of places. Let's go across the aisle now, and let's go to Senator Michael Connelly. Michael Connelly represents the western suburbs, Naperville, Wheaton, some of the areas out there. Senator Connelly, thanks for joining us tonight.
Great to be on the show. Thanks, Justin.
All right, so let's talk about this. Senator Staines, I'm behind, I guess, in my
sure.
thought, but there's no budget, there's no talk of passing what came out of the House. That's been tabled and sort of forgotten about. So what is the plan in the last few hours here for the state Senate?
Well, it sounds to me like what the Senate Democrats are about to do is pass it's an education only kind of a Chicago bailout bill. There will be no taking up of the House budget. And it's a disappointment to be sure. I feel for those who've been working the last 6 months in working groups trying to bridge the gap, so to speak. Heather Staines is one of them. I mean, Heather Staines, I believe, has been championing a kind of a global budget solution since January. And so to the extent there's been good faith extended by people on both sides of the aisle, the rug has been cut out from under them at the 11th hour. And it's really, it's irresponsible, to be sure.
Is this, I mean, is this a better scenario than sort of the political theater of passing the House budget and then giving it to the governor for him to veto and then not having the supermajority votes? Is this just sort of the Senate president's way of saying, all right, we're not going to do that because we know that's all a sham?
Well, I mean, at some point, then what have we been doing the last 6 months? Why have there been groups meeting on workers' compensation, on regulatory matters and, utilities and taxation? Well, yeah, I feel like a lot of rank and file people have been, I guess the only term that comes to mind this late in the game is they've been played to some extent. And it's a shame because the governor has been, from the get-go, willing to do something Republicans are anathema to do, and that is sign a tax bill. And all he's asked for is for the other side to come halfway. Bring me some workers' compensation reform. Bring me regulatory reform so I can go out and get that private sector investment into Illinois, which grows the revenue organically so that we can pay our bills. And that's where a lot of us, I've been here 7 years, and I just was talking to one of my colleagues, and I said, this is a scenario I never saw. I was telling people we were, there were too many people at the rank and file level working together quietly, frankly, behind the scenes. And I thought for sure there would be some resolution at this juncture. And for it to be played like this is very disappointing.
What's next? I mean, do you expect to be called this summer? I mean, do you think that the governor calls everyone back to get this done, even though now the 3/5 majority sort of comes into play?
I think we'll be called back. I know the House is coming back on Wednesday, on every Wednesday. I know the Republican House and Senate have proposed kind of a bridge appropriation to make sure that, K-12 is open, that our prisons and universities and colleges and government operations continue to the end of the calendar year. And that would give us time to continue these working groups and come to that, that resolution that, provides revenue, but also provides opportunities for organic revenue through economic growth.
Senator Michael Connelly, go ahead. Finish up. Yep, you got it.
I'm hoping for that, Justin, but, I'm a glasses half filled guy.
Senator Connelly represents Wheaton, Naperville, the western suburbs, state senator, Republican. Thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. So there we go. I mean, we go to the Senate. Now let's go to the other side, to the House. Obviously, the concern about the budget bill not being picked up by the Senate just means that the House stuff that happened, all the shenanigans that Representative Sandak and State Senator Murphy were talking about last week are really for naught. But let's bring in the other side. Let's start with Representative Will Guzzardi. He's a Democrat who represents some of the Northwest and West side districts here in Chicago, including Logan Square. Representative Guzzardi, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Justin. How are you doing?
Good. So as we just heard from the Senate, they're not going to pick up that bill, the House budget bill that was unbalanced. And they're right now voting on a K-12 appropriation for education. First, the overall tenor, Representative Guzzardi. I mean, do you feel like you guys got anything done in this spring session?
We got a lot done, and it's hard to remember that sometimes in the context of the challenges that we're facing with the budget. I mean, just today we passed one of the most important bills I think we've done in a while, which was automatic voter registration, which is going to really improve participation in the voting process. And look, I know that stuff sort of sounds like small change compared to the fact that our state's budget crisis is going on the way it is, but I am trying my best to join Senator Connelly and be a glasses half full kind of guy right now.
Well, there's been so much talk about working groups and about the political leaders on both sides just sort of playing shenanigans. What do you think of the process that just worked out in the last 6 months? Do you feel like the rug was pulled out from under you?
Well, listen, I think that the rank and file members on all four caucuses, House Dems, House Republicans, Senate Dems, Senate Republicans, I think all of us understand that we got to solve this. And from my understanding, I'm not in these working groups, but the reports that I've heard from the members who are participating is that they're making progress and that they are working toward consensus. And then the big million-dollar question is, when they reach that consensus, is it going to be good enough for the governor? Is he going to decide that it contains enough reforms for him, or is he going to go back to what he's done several times in the past and say, oh, this is well, but we also need to bust up the unions and lower wages for working people and, you know, throw in these poison pills and these deal breakers that he knows that we can't go along with. I don't honestly know. I'm hopeful that he sees the situation as dire as we do, and that he's willing to really, follow the lead of the rank and file members and kind of do so.
For you, I mean, obviously we had you on the program not too long ago talking about a progressive income tax or change in the income tax, which never really materialized. Did the vote even come up? I mean, it feels like a lot of the work that members of the rank and file had been working on to try and solve this problem really never got their fair due in the sort of public space. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, listen, I would have loved for us to have taken a vote on the progressive income tax. I think that the fact of the matter is, and we can try to talk our way around it, but the only way it's getting solved is by the state taking in more money to pay its bills, and that's going to mean somebody pays more taxes. And as I said to you before, I think the most important question is, who's that going to be? Is it going to be the poor? Is it going to be working families? Is it going to be middle-class families who are already struggling with property taxes and everything else? Or are we finally going to get real and ask the folks at the very top to do their fair share? So I think that's very important. I'm frustrated that it didn't get called for a vote, but also, I think it's sort of a divisive issue. And frankly, right now, I think that we've had a lot of votes on a lot of divisive issues, and I'm hopeful that we can join hands and come together and try to find some common ground.
Representative Will Guzzardi represents parts of Chicago, including Logan Square, Democrat representative in the House. Representative Guzzardi, thanks for joining us tonight.
Always great to be on with you, Justin. Take it easy.
Take care. All right. So I feel like this is a relay. I'm having some fun with this. Let's go right to our this is the last leg. Representative Ron Sandak, who represents places like Downers Grove, a Republican in the House. Representative Sandak, thanks for joining us tonight.
I love it. Best for last. Nice talking to you, Justin.
Good to talk to you. All right. So, you know, as we saw, the Senate's not going to even vote on the unbalanced bill that came out of the House that caused so much fervor last week. Do you consider that to be a win?
Well, I mean, when you're part of the minority party, whenever you can stop some measure of continued insanity and try and, you know, sprinkle the infield with some fiscal common sense, yeah, it's kind of a win. I'm hoping eventually, you know, the bills that Leader Durkin and Leader Redonio introduced get a vetting. The good news is, Justin, we didn't pass through both houses a budget that spends $40 billion on expected revenue of $33 billion,
right,
and doubling our already $7 billion in unpaid bills to $14 or $15 billion. So,
I guess that's kind of a win. I was going to say, at least that's an improvement, maybe.
Right.
For you, though, we come out of the spring session, looks like, unless we see a miracle here in the last 3 hours, without a budget. We've had you on the program a couple times and during the spring session. Talk about your optimism to get something done and how you're feeling right now.
Well, here's why I have a grain of optimism. The Senate Democrats aren't getting along and going along with the same old program that Speaker Madigan has typically shoved down their throats. They said no to him, finally, right? They didn't run his bill, finally. And I know, because I've talked to some of the Senate Democrats, and by the way, some of the House Democrats, they want to do something different. They know we can't continue to do the same thing.
Right.
So I have a grain of optimism that there's some semblance of common sense and rationality that we can tap to try and start talking about something that works, that actually balances. I got no choice.
Right.
That's what I got to be.
Well,
optimistic.
For both sides, I mean, we've seen the Senate Democrats tonight not picking up that bill. We saw House Republicans, some of your brethren, voting to veto or override the veto in the police and fire pension deal in Chicago. So we're seeing a little bit of Springfield, a little bit of fraying of the party line. Is that a good thing?
Right. Well, I don't think it's a bad thing. So, yes, I think it's a good thing. We saw vetoes upheld by and large, but overridden in one sense or two senses. We've seen, you know, typically rank and file Democrats that follow leadership relatively blindly say stop. No, we're not doing that. We want to be part of the process. So, albeit small incremental steps, but in the aggregate, these may be signs of real movement and significant improvement in the way things get done, which, you know, again, I got to use and hang on to and cling on to as optimistic.
Representative Ron Sandak, he joins the program regularly. He is a state rep from Downers Grove. Representative Sandak, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Justin. Take care, man.
All right. Did you hear that, Rob? We went round the horn.
I was rolling on the whole thing, my friend.
How about it?
It was good.
I like that. I like this. You know, the one thing I like spreading out and being able to talk to a lawmaker for a longer time, but the truth of the matter is that they're really good with talking points. They just say the same thing over and over.
They have never met a talking point memo that they will not leave their office without.
But I felt like on all four of them, they were able to express some sort of emotion on the fact that it's 9:30 at night on the last day of spring session and they're walking away without a budget.
My takeaway is that they're all exhausted.
Yeah, they should be.
Absolutely. You know what? What upsets me is that we've heard all this talk about working groups. Mm-hmm. I would like to hear talk about Madigan and Rauner and Cullerton in the same room. That's what I'd like to hear talk about.
You know, the truth of everything is smoke and mirrors. I'll bet you they're best friends.
I doubt it.
All three of them are like, oh, man, you watch right now. They're watching the Cubs Dodgers and they're like, you're the best, Bruce. And Mike, you're the best. And then they're like, OK, so what should we put out in the press release? I'll say that it's the same old. Oh, that's good. That's good.
Rauner's probably leaning over. You know, Mike, I've got this tax, property tax issue I need to deal with.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear you've helped out a few people.
I'd call you, but you don't have a cell phone.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 10 o'clock. Are you ready for this? It's the worst. 312-981-7200. If you haven't heard the segment is pretty simple. It is really to just complain about the worst things in our society. And we got plenty to talk about. I feel like, you know, you want to know what's the worst? When people Facebook Live Beyonce.
Oh my God!
But they're like up in the nosebleeds at Soldier Field, so it's just like it's chaotic and it's dark, and you're like that little ant.
Down my list too. Yeah, Facebook Living the video screen, like the video monitor. Not even her. They were Facebook Living the video screen. Oh, come on, enough.
That is true. That is the worst. That was so much Beyonce. I like Beyonce. I'm a Beyonce fan. But there was just so much Beyonce in my social media feeds Friday and Saturday.
They ate at Bucks in Wicker Park.
I didn't even know what Bucks was. What is Bucks?
It's a new Southern restaurant that took the place of another Southern restaurant.
Oh, it's the Wicker Park Southern restaurant.
Yeah.
I went to Wicker Park on Saturday night. I had not been there in a while, especially at night. Like that, usually I find myself, if I go, I'll go to Dove's, which I really like that restaurant,
man,
but I'll do that for like breakfast.
Yeah.
Because our schedule. On Saturday night, I went with the boy to go see a theater play, see Collabor Action, Anthony Mosley's play.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it was really great. It was really fun. And but I had come out of there on, you know, like in, you know, a little bit later than bedtime, like around 9 o'clock, 9:15, and then I knew it was going to be a longer night. And I was like, son, like I got down on one knee. I'm like, this is what happens in this neighborhood at night. Like it was just everybody. They're so nice out Saturday night. It was just like, you could just tell it was like busting at the seams. Luckily I got out of there before anything busted.
I get nervous when I leave here on Friday evenings, you know, leave like at 12:30, 1 o'clock or whatever after the show, walking down, you know, near Hubbard. There's so many people out, and a lot of them are intoxicated. You just kind of like.
Have you ever heard Amy Goose Gauntlet?
Yeah, Goose Gauntlet. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, because she used to work the Saturday night till 2 o'clock, and then she would go down Hubbard Street and she would live tweet. Now she could Facebook Live it. See, I'd much rather see that than Beyonce from a video store.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like if it's a Facebook Live, Now Live, Hubbard Street, I'd be like, I'm in. Beyonce, I'm like, I how do I get this off my,
It was everywhere.
Everywhere. It was. All right, some programming notes, because Pete and I were talking about this. We're going to, for the summer season, it's after Memorial Day, so now the download moves to the summer season.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a new lineup of programming. We're going to continue the same sort of first couple hours with the big table. Some great guests coming up. This week alone, there's going to be some amazing people coming through. Tim Meadows will be here, which was really fun. Saturday Night Live cast member who will be hosting the Breakout Festival at Second City for NBC this weekend. Also coming up this week, we're going to tomorrow, Allison Flowers is on, The Exonerate Diaries. Very excited to talk to her. That's a really interesting project. Also, Maria Pinto, the famed fashion designer here in Chicago. So a lot of great names, and I'm only scratching the surface on the people who are coming through here in the next couple weeks. But coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, you know, we kind of had a little bit of a log jam, a traffic jam, if you will, on segments that we liked. So starting tonight, the worst is moving to Tuesday nights. the worst, of course, where you tell us what's the worst for prizes. It's a pretty simple concept. And we have comedians who come in studio tonight. Erica Reed will be here and Dave Hellum. And we're going to start doing a 10 to 11 on Tuesday nights.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So that the reason we do that, because Monday nights, we want to make room for more live music. We've been doing the live music Mondays at the end of the show, the last two things, and it's just always really, really crammed tight. I find like I'm always flowing over into the start of Patty's show.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't have enough time, so we're going to make it a full hour from 10 to 11 and showcase two or three songs from the band and talk to the band. What do you think?
Sounds wonderful.
I love it. We need a name for that. You know, I was trying to think like, you know.
The Encore?
Yeah, right.
Something like that.
Something that's like, I always liked Sessions, you know, something like the
late night Sessions,
the North Michigan Avenue Sessions, you know, or something like
that.
You know, like give it like a cool, like it's a studio, like the Electric Ladyland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to name it. We have the Allstate Studio as the name, but that's kind of Allstate Showcase Studio Sessions. Maybe. Studios. Anyway, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Tuesday will be the worst. Wednesday, we're moving, what we had on Wednesdays was Picnic. Which was the picking the nickname, a nickname for every single Chicago Cub for 2016. We did have the White Sox involved in that as well. That is being rethought.
Are you sick of the White Sox now?
I'm just, as a White Sox fan, I'm not extremely happy with what I saw in the last week and a half, to be honest with you.
It's been a rough one.
Not only, I mean, there's one thing to be outplayed, and there's one thing to be, but when you, I mean, the White Sox are being, they're competitive, and they're losing games in spectacular fashion. A lot of time, like on Saturday, the move with Robin Ventura, and it's just, you know what, move on. We're not going to talk about it. But we decided, since we're getting so close to the idea of, you know, we keep doing two players per night on Picnic, that we're going to run out of players. So we've decided to go to one player, 1 half hour. So from 10 to 10:30 on Wednesdays will be Picnic, 312-981-7200. And 10:30 will be Character Flaws, which is great for us because Character Flaws is one of my favorite things to do, and that's sketch improv performances. One of the hardest parts, I'll be honest with you, is just finding the brain space to get that done, to line people up and to go over the bit. It takes a little bit more than sort of booking a guest and researching it. When you're getting comedians in, a lot of it comes towards... you know, towards me to be like, okay, I'm going to, here's the bit, one, two, three, this is how we're going to do it. And it takes a little, so moving it to a half hour might actually help in terms of getting some strong stuff in here. Thursday night, I think we got a winner with Greg, right? Was Greg? No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Greg Flam.
Mm-hmm.
Greg was great on Swap Meet. I don't know if you caught that last week, 312-981-7200.
I heard a little bit.
This was the idea of coming in with some cool Chicago stuff and people calling and saying, I got something better. That's essentially the bit. So that's going to be Thursday nights, and that's going to share space with some more of the experimental spots. So that's where we have new ideas. So we're thinking once a month on Swap Meet, once a month on Right Club Radio, which is Ian and Lindsay's great.
I love it.
And then also some other ideas that get thrown in. And then Friday night, the frying pan with Steve Gadlin stays. So that's our lineup.
That's a summer lineup.
That's a summer lineup. I like that. And we got some cool concepts for call-ins for 10 o'clock. Some stuff will come out. We'll try in the spots we have on Thursday nights. Does that sound good?
Sounds wonderful.
All right. Interesting. Chicago Tribune, Cloud Street, which is Rick Pearson and Monique Garcia and Kim Geiger and others that are working on that blog, say that the Illinois Senate is taking up the Madigan House pass budget now, presumably to vote it down. So they're not only, Heather said they're not, Senator Stain said they're not bringing it up at all. It looks like they're going to essentially send a message. So that's a waste of time. 17-31 was the vote. So 10 voted present, 17 voted yes, 31 voted no. So the Senate votes down the Madigan bill. Ladies and gentlemen, get up out your seats. Political theater is about to begin. Come on. Didn't they just told us? They just came on and told us. They just told us in the 9 o'clock hour, we're not going to take that up. It's not going to pass. So we're not going to call it. So somebody decided to call it. And that's politics. So I guess they were right. They just needed to flow this out through the public. Do you like that that kind of political? Are you a political guy, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I pay attention.
Right.
But, yeah. Yeah, I would say so.
773 says, the worst is not having a budget yet for our children's education. Lots of cuts being made at high schools all over the place for next year. That's true. And I've heard a lot today. There's meetings all over Chicago Public Schools tomorrow, Thursday. All to sort of... have closed doors and open doors conversations about the cuts that possibly come down based on the fact that there will be no funding for next year. How about that, huh? So not good, but you know what? At least they voted on something. I don't know. I'm excited that the takeaway for me is that I did feel after talking to all four lawmakers that there was some optimism. Even the ones that were kind of, even Representative Sandex really forced the optimism.
Yeah.
But he said that there seemed to be getting closer and closer to a compromise, even if they couldn't get it done for this session. Okay. Right? So I feel good about that, I guess, you know, as I just kind of go off my gut instinct. I feel good that at least the lawmakers are not sort of stuck, you know, putting their foot in the sand and digging in their heels and being like, nope, we're not changing anything. And this game of proverbial political chicken might be coming to an end.
Why does it take so long?
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, because now you're talking about a year and a half for the governor. So is it just that, you know, it's taken a year and a half for a Republican governor to figure out how to work with a sort of entrenched Democrat majority in both the House and the Senate?
Yeah, that could be. I mean, he's not a politician.
Right. So maybe he's learning, like, I'm going to come in, and then it doesn't work that way. And now he's like, okay, so now I've adapted and I'm figuring it out. I'm going to
play the game.
Yeah, I'm going to play the game a little bit more. I mean, it's interesting, like there's a lot of texts that came in, you know, there's interesting stuff. You know, I think that, you know, some people are upset that, you know, the House didn't and the Senate didn't get it done. Others are saying, you know, we need to do the progressive income tax. The others are saying, how dare you even talk about taxes? So, I mean, it's I don't know. I'm really, I guess I share the optimism as someone who talks about it a lot on the program, that it does feel like a different kind of tone. Even though they didn't get a budget done and that was their job. That was their job. They didn't get it done, but at least there's some optimism that they're working together. Now, does that get thrown out when they go into a summer or a veto session or anything that happens in the next year? Because now, if I'm not mistaken, they come back for a fall session. And then there's a veto set. Like there's a there's not a lot left in the calendar after the spring session. The big chunk is now.
Yeah.
And now it's all like, okay, let's get ready for it. And then nothing's going to get done in the summer. You're kidding yourself if you think that there's going to be a budget deal done before an election. Because nobody's going to want to put anything. I mean, if they feel like they can keep the status quo, and the leaders will do that. And I also feel like, and I know that this is politics, and it's not my business, meaning it's I'm not my profession, not my it's none of my business. It is my business. But the I do also think that at some point or another, it might be smart to just have a symposium, small little symposium, on making sure that the leaders of respective houses and chambers, executive, legislative, judicial, are not also heads of the political parties. And I only mean that, and I know that Madigan, we get the, but Rauner is moving into that. So now it's the decisions being made and all of this hubbub that happened, all of that unbalanced budget, all of that was just for political card playing. That was chess. But it had more to do with November and the swing districts that are in play than you and me, Pete.
Yep.
And at a certain point, if that was removed in some form, and, you know, obviously you're going back decades in Chicago and the state of Illinois, because Mayor Richard J. Daley was the head of the Democratic Party for years. You know, if there was a way to remove that and they weren't playing for that kind of power, I wonder if the outcome would be different. I don't know. Again, I'm not a politician. I don't know that business well. But that just seems like something that could be a fix. If we were going to do an hour on how to improve, like that was something I was thinking about, like what could we do, like almost like a long game kind of let's improve politics.
Yeah.
How would you improve politics? And that's the kind of thing. I would say split the, you cannot be that, it should be a whoever's in charge of the Republican or Democrat party for the state of Illinois cannot hold elective office. I think that that would make it at least a little bit of a power structure, and then take that stuff away from each other. Then they're not making one-to-one decisions based on their party's well-being. I don't know. But again, I'm no politician.
It's going down.
All right, it's Tuesday night. It's time for the worst. 312-981-7200. This, of course, is a very simple subject segment. What's the worst? You know what's the worst? As we said before, anyone who Facebook Lives Beyonce from the nosebleeds, and as Pete added, Facebook Living the video screen right at Beyonce, not actual Beyonce, but the video screen of her.
We can't see actually
yeah,
her.
Yeah, right. And so that's the worst. That's
so basically you're just bootlegging a Beyonce concert, right? That's what that is.
Exactly. Of course, it's the segment where we will collectively bemoan and decry and cry and point out the miseries of our society for prizes. That's what we're going to do tonight. We got a pair of tickets to Barefoot in the Park. We also have some pizzas to give away, Lou Malnati's gift certificates. It's the worst here on the download. I want to introduce our panel tonight, Dave Hellum. Dave was on the program before. He is performing in Second City's Afrofuturism, the great show at Second City Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. Dave, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Erica Reed is here. She's also a member of She's Crafty, the Beastie Boys tribute group that we play at Reggie's this Saturday night. Also, she's directing a comedy about baseball called Strike Three, which will be at the Public House Theater Wednesdays in June. And she's also going to be part of the Chicago Women's Funny Festival. Erica Reed, thanks for being here.
Oh, my gosh. It is such a pleasure and an honor.
Becoming, I emceed the Bike to Drive this week. I was downstairs and there's people like, hey, man, I'll bet you this is the worst. You're like, all right.
You know what the worst is the day after the Bike to Drive when you hadn't biked in a year and you're like, oh, things are hurting.
See, the key to emceeing is you don't bike.
Yeah.
So you act like you're with everybody and like, oh, yeah, how was it? Everybody, so wasn't it crazy? Wasn't it crazy?
They had that that naked bike ride last year. Yeah. That was pretty disgusting. Yeah. Seeing like fat people on divvy bikes, like just... I don't want to see that.
You gotta wipe it down, like at the gym.
Like why would you be naked on a public bike? That's not.
There's so many things wrong with that.
Get your own bike if you're gonna go.
Yeah, don't use Divvy for the naked bike ride.
No, don't do it. That's the worst.
I have a yearly subscription just for the naked bike.
Pete Zimmerman, how are you, my man?
Wonderful.
All right, you want to start us off with the worst this week?
Sure.
All right, here we go.
What's the worst?
What's the worst?
Deodorant that's good for the environment. Terrible.
You really had some deodorant problems lately.
It's like putting grass on your armpits. Yeah, this doesn't work.
That's your Rogers Park spirit. That's going over to the Heartland being like, I need some deodorant.
No, I need chemicals. Give me chemicals. Right. Screw that's the environment. Score.
There you go. 312-981-7200. Let's go around the horn first. Dave, what do you got?
The worst for me is people who don't respect my vegetarianism. Like, I tell people I'm a vegetarian. I'm not a small guy, right? But they never say, like, oh, that's great. They say, oh, well, how long have you been vegetarian? Because they're like testing me. You know, I'm just like, I don't like you. And then I have to go to McDonald's. And here's the worst as well. When I order an egg and cheese biscuit and it costs more money than a biscuit with meat on it, right? I'm just like, how?
Yeah, it's like they somehow decide because it's customized. Yeah. Because they took the meat off it, that's more money.
Well, I have a sausage biscuit, 99 cents, but my egg and cheese biscuit is $6.70, which is not. I hate you. I hate you, McDonald's.
That's the worst.
That's the worst. All right, Erica, what do you got?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
When you're listening to a live recording of a concert and then the band has the audience sing, I don't want to hear the audience sing. I want to hear the band sing. And you know what else is the worst about that? Is that all audiences sound the same. It could be any concert, same audience.
Yes.
I don't
that is a
hear
good
that.
Point. That's a good
that's
point.
Very good point.
It's the worst.
I paid money to hear this live concert after the fact. I don't want to hear the audience sing.
I don't want to hear the audience. I could sing.
Right.
I don't want to hear myself
you
sing
You guys
it.
Know the words.
Yeah. Always makes me
Who's
mad.
Who's singing? Who does that? What artists do that? Is that like
a lot. I feel like a lot. Yes. And it always makes me really
There's
angry.
A certain genre of music. I guess it crosses over genre.
Yeah.
Because I could see a country singer doing that. Like, everybody, I got friends. Please.
Right.
Yeah, you can do that. And then rappers will do it, right? Yeah. Do it for their stuff. And
now,
then
I have to fully disclose that when I'm at concerts and bands ask us to do that, I will fully sing full voice.
Right. When you're there, but not.
But I don't want to record it and listen to it later. Or I don't want anybody else to hear it.
That's weird. Yeah. I agree.
It's the worst.
Let's go to Justin on the line. Justin, what's the worst?
Worst is when the weather is anything other than ideal. The expressways will turn into a parking lot.
Yeah. I know, right? I don't understand the physics. The basic physics of that. It's not. It's just rain.
You can do 90 miles an hour in sunny drive, but when it rains, it's 5 miles or less.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, man. That is true. That I don't know what it is about bad weather that makes Chicago turn into a parking lot. Obviously, everyone slows down. I guess it's safety in some form. All right, 224. The worst is when your sick 2-year-old spits right into your mouth and then laughs.
That's the worst.
Yeah, what?
I just snorted. I'm sorry. That's so ridiculous.
Makes me wonder if it was an intentional or an accidental. A toddler.
312's got, you know what's the worst? Washing a load of your clothes and then going to put on your favorite shirt and finding that somehow one of your kids' blue crayons snuck into the wash.
Oh man.
That's not so bad.
That's disappointing.
A crayon?
Like, a crayon.
It's not a marker. You would think that a marker would have more. Well,
but I feel like there would be no way. Once that melted down in some form and it was stuck to your clothes, there's
waxy.
No way you're nowhere getting that done.
You have to iron it out with like wax paper or something.
I have no experience with this whatsoever.
224 followed up. This was the when your kid's sick and spits in your mouth and then laughs. He did it on purpose.
Oh, my gosh. That's the worst. That's the worst.
You need an exorcism at this point. If your child's spitting in your throat.
262 says the worst is when the DMV screws up and everyone has to wait in long lines for emissions testing. They're ripping on something that happened to me today.
Oh.
What happened?
It was just, I was complaining about it earlier that the it wasn't a DMV, it's the Secretary of State's office. They messed up with the paperwork because they've been doing this thing where they're not sending stuff out because, you know, stamps cost
right.
money and they don't have it anymore.
Right.
So essentially to get your city sticker, or not your city, but your license plate sticker, you have to, on some years, you have to do an emissions test before they let you. Well, they didn't send the paperwork out, so nobody knows. So they're going to the DMVs, and they're like, hey, you got to go get your emissions tested. Mm-hmm. So today in Chicago and in the suburbs, there were five-mile lines. And there was a huge story in Chicago at Webster and Webster and Elston.
Yeah, it's near
that
Elston,
it just
yeah.
like it curled traffic like miles in each direction because we were joking about the person just, I'm turning left. I don't care. I'm blocking it.
Wow. I dance right near there in my dance company, and there was lots of talk about Elston is
yeah, it's
backed up,
right. yeah.
so that makes sense.
Yeah, all the aldermen call like were in the news tonight about it because it was such a big deal. Like because people all waited to the last minute because they didn't know they had to do it, and then they had to do it.
That area is pretty congested just most of the time, though. I don't.
Yeah. I mean, Whirly Ball moved over there.
Yeah,
and you can't get anywhere.
That's what my first thought when I came up on the emissions thing. I'm like, well, Whirly Ball is pretty popular today. Let's hope it's Whirly Ball. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Play some more of the worst with Erica and Dave. Stay with us. It's the worst here on the download. 312-981-7200. Our new night for the worst. Tuesday nights. And to christen, Dave Hellum and Erica Reed are here. Dave Hellum, part of the Second City Afrofuturism show that you can see Tuesday and Wednesdays at 8 o'clock. Erica Reed, she's in She's Crafty, the Beastie Boys tribute band, which will be at Reggie's on Saturday night.
I want to see that. That sounds like really cool.
You should come see it.
It is good. It's
amazing.
Very good. She's also directing a comedy about baseball called Strike Three at the Public House Theater Wednesdays in June. And she's also going to be at the Chicago Women's Funny Festival in June as well. All right, 312-981-7200. 262 says, the worst is when you're watching the Cubs game on TV. And you see people in the box seats looking at their phone and not paying attention to each pitch.
Mm. That's an old person. Darn smartphone. Like, yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's reality.
I don't know if I've ever been to a game, even before cell phones, where I paid attention to every pitch. I mean, it feels like that's you kind of go and you're like, it's a somewhat social event, especially yeah. with your friends.
It's such a slow game, too. Like, it's, yeah. it's not like it's a hockey game right. or it's basketball, even. Like, it's just baseball players are some of the most out of shape people. Not Jake Arrieta. Like, I know he's like a beast, but I just remember like Kruk and just looking like at any moment he was going to need like to have like a triple bypass surgery like, after the game was over.
It's charm. That's baseball charm.
Yeah.
Maybe those people in the bleachers were Facebook Living it for one. We don't know. They're like up in the bleachers. Well,
you
like,
make a good point. It is essentially bootlegging. So it is like
it is.
Didn't they teach us in What's Happening when they tried to bootleg the Doobie Brothers concert?
Mm.
And that was a big deal. Do you remember that? Like the
I
neighborhood.
Don't, but I
toughen.
Wish I did.
Nobody remembers that.
No,
episode.
That's, come on.
This is not a real thing. Like you just made this up right here.
The neighborhood ruffian. Makes Rerun stick a tape recorder underneath his shirt for a Doobie Brothers concert. And they're in the front row.
Doobie
and they get
Brothers.
Up. They get up. And
Please
they're like,
stop.
Yay. And it drops out. And they're all like, hey, man, look. Like they look.
Like it was a wire.
Yeah. And they go backstage and they work it out. But
oh
it's like
gosh.
Almost to tell not to bootleg.
You know what? I have to find this episode. And to find it, I'm going to have to bootleg it.
You are going to have to bootleg. Bootleg the YouTube of the bootleg. 312-981-7200. All right. Wow, the worst. Okay, this is a long one. You guys ready?
Yes.
Let's go.
My bathroom at 3:45 Monday morning. I got up to go to the bathroom and lifted up the lid and proceeded to drop my cell phone in the toilet. Google said to put the phone in a sealed bag of white rice to dry it out, which
yeah.
I didn't have because I'm off white carbs. So I go to the 24-hour convenience store around the corner, and they don't sell rice, period. Ended up using a vacuum cleaner hose to suck out all the moisture, as per a YouTube video told me. Phone has worked fine, but randomly rebooted 3 times on the bike tonight at the gym.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I'm also... Your
Thank
phone
you.
At 3 in the morning when you use the bathroom? You got to check your phone
just
at 3
go to
the morning.
Bathroom, right.
Just go to the bathroom. Like me, when I go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I just stumble out of bed like a zombie.
Right.
I'm in, I'm out.
You're not checking Twitter.
I don't need to check Twitter.
His phone works, my email. Like, so it's not the worst, because your phone could not be functional right now. Yeah. Stop complaining, sir. Yeah. Okay?
The worst, and this happened to a friend of mine, did it in a public bathroom.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and you it fell in the toilet, phone. And then you're like, you know, like, yeah. Fishing it out was not, it was not a clean bathroom.
Just blow your phone up at that
yeah,
point.
At that point, this was like it. A late night bar kind you of just situation. Flush it was not good.
I've dropped my toothbrush in the toilet before.
And did you get rid of the toothbrush, or were you like, I
no,
can
I used
salvage it?
It? No, I'm just kidding. I got rid of it. I was like, see ya, toothbrush.
I wasn't going to say anything. I was like, all right.
Respect.
All right. I got a lot of them here. I just got to figure out. The worst is when you come home, 773. The worst is when you come home to find your dog had an accident upstairs on the hardwood floor, only for that accident to drip down the ceiling tile in the kitchen below.
That's the worst.
See, these are hard because I'm flying fast and loose, so this is where you get a little bit, you know, I probably wouldn't have done that one if I knew it was a bathroom. I'm not a huge fan of the bathroom ones, but that's a good one. 847. The worst is when the birthday cake slid off the plastic tray as you were entering the restaurant and it was upside down. Had to scoop it up, rearrange frosting, take it in, and say it slid around in the car. That's Ed from Joliet. That's a good one.
That's really a good.
When you're the oh, it just re- oh, look oh, at that.
It was a bumpy car ride.
773 says the worst is when people who leave their car double parked in a one-way street for nearly 15 minutes.
Ooh,
oh, yeah, that's the worst.
I hate that.
I would say the worst than that is double parking in a two-lane like Ashland. Anyone who double parks on Ashland is just, what are you doing?
That happened to me the other day, and just straight up ahead was a place they could, like a hydrant, they could have put their flashers on for a minute.
The
like, two just lane, get out of the street.
The two-lane street, if you're on Western or you're on Ashland or you're on any of the ones that are two lanes, like you're forcing people for your double park job. Mm-hmm. You're forcing people to move to a different lane.
You're turning a street into a maze. Like you have to like curve. I hate that. I live in Little Village and people, it's like the culture and I'm not used to it, but I'm not going to say anything because I'm not that
tough.
There's
a lot of double parking. Like, going to go up to somebody. Hey, I don't live here. I'm not from Little Village, but what's with the double park?
No, they won't talk to me. It's okay. Say hello to the corn man and
the elote guy.
The elote
man.
Elote.
262 says the worst is when you stop at the gas station to buy a beverage and the person behind the counter sneezes into their hand and wipes their nose and then uses that to grab your beverage. And
that's
when you just leave.
In the area that you put your mouth. I like that's how they finish.
In that area where you put your mouth.
Okay. All right.
They thought about that.
That's the worst. Nope.
What do you got, Pete Zimmerman? What do you think? You got another one for us? Take us to the news.
Sure. You know what's the worst, Justin?
What's the worst, Pete?
Talking about your allergies. I hate when people talking about their allergies. I don't care. Stop it. Everybody has them. They're terrible. We know.
It's really funny you said that because I was out front and I was talking to my neighbor. She was out there with her daughter. And she said something about her allergies. And I said, yeah, I kind of have the same thing. I forgot what it was. Whatever I said, she said, oh, that's just like my husband. He's got the same thing. And then she says, and then her daughter said something. He goes, boys don't ever do anything about their allergies, honey. Like, that's what she said. Like guy, like, essentially, like, why doesn't he take medicine?
Yeah.
And they're like, she broke it down in a perfect way. She's like, boys don't take stuff for allergies. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of true. I'd be like, I don't know what's wrong with my, I don't know what this is, but I don't care. I'm not going to do anything about it.
Kids are good like that. I was one time talking about how badly I wanted donuts, and this kid was like, why don't you just make them? And I'm like, that's a really good point. But then I made them, and it turns out that making donuts is very difficult.
I was going to say that. It's terrible advice.
Who makes
kid.
Donuts?
Yeah, that there's deep frying in that.
Yeah.
Right? You can't just put that on it. Like, there's, like, actual oil and stuff. That's a terrible idea.
It's doable. It's just really hard. But then the next time I saw that kid, I was like, hey,
the cleanup
this
alone.
Is why.
Yeah. Now you have a good reason to tell the kid. Good, I was looking for you. Listen.
Life lesson.
Life lesson. That's not going to work.
I could just buy a donut.
All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break for the news. We'll come back. Dave Hellum and Erica Reed in studio. It's the worst here on the download. Stay with us.
What's going down?
Welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, we're playing the worst here. 312-981-7200. Dave Hellum and Erica Reed are in studio. Dave Hellum, he performs with Second City's Afrofuturism Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. Erica Reed, she's in She's Crafty, which will be at Reggie's on Saturday night. And she's also directing a comedy about baseball, Strike Three, at the Public House Wednesdays in June. She'll also be at the Chicago Women's Funny Festival. This is also in June. All right, so let's go to the lines. Let's go to Frank. Frank,
yes.
What's the worst?
The worst is when you're playing video poker, you're dealt a winning hand, but you forget to hit hold on each card, and you deal your next hand, and you throw away your winning hand.
Oh, man. I don't even know. I don't play video poker, but I'm assuming that's the worst.
That is the worst.
Yeah, it's bad. And what's even worse than that is when you do it twice.
Or when you lose your house to a gambling problem. Yeah, that's bad.
Watch out. Yeah, you need those wins. Thanks, Frank.
I know that moment
I'm keep
when you're
Frank
like,
on hold. I like that.
That moment when you realize what you've done and you're like, no, oh, and you can't get it back.
Especially when there's money on the line.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only think of, you know, any small stakes situations I've been in Vegas or at a casino where you're like, I didn't mean to do that. I wasn't paying attention. Mm. Oh, I lost money.
It's bad enough when you're just like playing games on your phone. You're like, I messed it up.
One thing like when you're playing Mario Kart and you're like, I didn't recognize. Oh, I'm in fourth.
Playing Scrabble and you're like, I missed that triple word score.
Oh my gosh. when you mess up your own money, like,
yeah,
I had my, I got to tell you the story now, Justin. All right. I had my first international comedy show. I got a passport. I didn't have a passport before, like, last week. So I rushed it. My passport came in time because I had a show in Punta Cana Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
It's my first comedy show.
Congratulations.
My first time getting paid. Just being outside of America. But I'm doing comedy. Not only do I miss my flight. On Friday, I end up having to pay the promoter for my missed flight, my missed hotel room, as well as the deposit that I have to give back to him now. So
you ended up caught.
I had the crying Jordan face. That was me just then.
If anyone wants to pay for it, we should do like a pledge drive for Dave.
Yeah.
Hey, people.
I'll contribute.
Maybe we can, maybe I'll
go fund me. If homeless people can do it, I can do it. I've seen so many homeless people with GoFundMes right now, so why not? Let's do it.
So many GoFundMe homeless pages. You just can't get through them.
A homeless person actually asked me that. Like, I didn't have any money, and it wasn't GoFundMe. He said I could quick pay him if I didn't have any money. I was like, why do you have an email address? Like I don't understand.
That's the new thing. Yeah, I guess I don't have any money. They're like, I'll take quick pay.
Yeah,
that's what libraries are for. Use the email.
847, the worst, stubbing your toe.
That is pretty bad. It hurts a lot.
It's a simple one, but it kind of works. 262 says, the worst is when you find your son's missing Lego piece with your bare foot when you're walking down the stairs.
Yeah. Or similarly, like a little shard of glass from when you broke a glass the week before.
Oh.
Yeah.
773 says, the worst is when someone races you to the last parking space.
And they look you in the eye. Yes. And they look at you like,
I am making this choice.
630's got one. The worst is when you're on the last CD of a book and there's a defect on the CD, so you can't finish the book.
That's the worst.
That is the worst, right?
What do you do?
First world problems.
Gotta go to the library, read that. Well, libraries don't have books anymore, really. How do you find out what happens?
I know, right?
The internet.
630, the worst, trying to listen to your favorite radio program and the 3-year-old wants to tell you all about the moth she just saw. Not really. She's the best. That's what it says here. We don't think the 3-year-old's the worst. She's the best.
I kind of want to hear about the moth.
Right?
It must be pretty cool. Moths are pretty cool.
They are. I would say, moths are the worst.
Moths are the worst.
I had these little guys in my house that were like, they weren't even like cool moths. Like the one thing about moths is you're like, oh, that's such a cool design. No, these were just little, like little guys of nothing, and you're like, what? You don't even do anything. You don't even move when I try to kill you.
Right.
Like you're just you have no redeeming qualities.
And there's the food moths, and then there's the wool moths. Right. My husband's on a one man moth terrorism. Like he's like he is knocking off moths left and right. If he sees them, like he gets a glint in his eye, and he won't rest until he kills the moths. And you have traps everywhere.
And he's never gonna win.
No.
He's never going to win.
I found like three baby moths in the closet last night. I was like, hey, there's some new moths.
Are you
here.
Hiding them? You're like,
oh. I have a fear of moths.
Escape you have a fear of moths?
Escape
out
the back door.
They're furry. Like, they're like furry and they're like butterflies, but like they're like hipster butterflies. Like they're just butterflies with beards. And slides. I don't understand it. I don't like it.
Let's go to the phone. Sarah, what's the worst, Sarah?
The worst would be I have two little girls. And they'll take my cell phone, which is synced with my Facebook, and they'll just call random numbers. Mm. And so, like, my one-year-old was talking to somebody that I went to the eighth grade dance with that I haven't spoke to in, like, I don't even know. Wouldn't even know him. Or just, like a coworker that I had at another job that I didn't even know we were friends. And so then I have to get through somehow, like, oh, hey, yeah. It's just so uncomfortable.
Isn't that what social media is for, to bring us all together?
Awkwardly.
Yes, awkwardly. Well, by your child.
It's really creepy that I have them in my phone. And, you know, it's just, you can't come back from that.
You really can't come back from that. I think what you need to do is move out of the country.
Yeah.
You need to get to some tropical locale and just go undercover, go incognito.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Good deal.
All right, Sarah, hold on, okay?
Like, think about how great that is. Like, if you want to get back at somebody and you have, like, your child call them and let them know that not only, like, are you over them, but you also have a family and, like, an offspring just to like rub it in more, like,
oh, did my call? That's weird. That's my son, my beautiful boy, is calling you. We never had a kid. I'm so sorry. Facebook's so crazy. Let's go to Susan. Susan, what's the worst, Susan?
Being in a public bathroom and going to reach for the toilet paper and there is none.
Oh, yeah. So what do you do?
Yeah, what do you do? Or maybe don't answer that.
That is the worst.
That's the worst.
All right, let's try another one. Let's go to Rich. Rich, what's the worst, Rich?
When you've gone to like one of these big home shopping centers, you know, and you're carrying some big box and you're walking behind somebody's pickup truck and they haven't taken the trailer hitch off the back of their truck and you nail your shin right into that.
Ooh. Oh, man, the whole room just kind of ew.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the full meaning of pain.
Do you hold on to the box? You hold on to the box?
No.
No, you let it go.
Yep, let it go. Grab the shin, lay on the ground like a little girl and cry.
Oh. Thanks, Rich. Thanks.
Yep. Have a good evening.
You too. There you go. 312-981-7200. Okay, I'll read the rest. I got a ton. This is great. There's so much here. And then Erica, Dave, and myself, we will pick the winners. Who gets the tickets and the pizzas when we return? It's the worst here on the download. Stay with us. It is the download. It's the worst. It is 10:50. On Tuesday night, 312-981-7200. We're wrapping it up. We got some prizes to give away. Dave Hellam and Erica Reed in studio. Dave, stand-up comedian. He's also in Second City's Afrofuturism, great variety show that's on Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock at the Second City. Mm-hmm. Erica Reed is in the Beastie Boys tribute band, the all-female Beastie Boys tribute band.
That's right.
She's Crafty, which will be at Reggie's in the South Loop on Saturday. She's also directing a comedy about baseball called Strike Three at the Public House Theater Wednesdays in June, and she'll be at the Chicago Women's Funny Festival in June as well. All right, let's get to this text. I got a lot of people on the line, and we're going to get through all these.
Let's do it.
312, politicians are the worst. Yeah, that's low-hanging fruit on a night that we're talking about politics, right? 815, The worst is after running her first Wrigley 5K, my daughter, her friends, and I went to the Cubby Bear to celebrate. Mm. She and I hit the head. That's a bathroom. First, she drops her hydrate drink in the toilet, bends down to fish it out, turns back, and her expensive sunglasses fall in. Mm. And when she bent down to fish them out, her phone fell out of her pocket and joined the glasses.
Oh, that's great. That is.
Needless to say, she switched from health drink to alcohol. Lots of it. That's a lot. That
it's
is
like a
worst.
One-person farce happening in that toilet stall.
815, crawling into bed at 11 o'clock at night before the big meeting and finally finding that earwig as it crawls across your face at 2 a.m. Mm. Now you may never sleep.
Right.
Man, that's terrible. The worst, 773, the worst is when a bird poops on your clean car you just bought as a surprise gift.
Oh.
It's like a Lexus
christening.
Commercial.
Yeah. It's a giant bow on top of it with a piece of bird poop.
I like that.
312, the worst is people who listen to audiobooks. Yeah. I don't know about that. There's a lot to I want to get to the ones that we skipped earlier. The worst is when people can't keep up to speed on a 50-mile-per-hour zone. Yeah. 319, the worst is waiting for CPD for 2 hours just to be told there's nothing they can do.
Oh.
Yeah, that's, well, I wouldn't just say that's CPD. That's any police department. I mean, they can't do some things they can't do. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
262, the worst, oh, we did that one, the sneezes. 262, the worst is when you look forward to your baked Spam on the way to your night job.
Oh,
that is the worst.
Your life sucks, man. Like
847 says the worst is living in a state that can't pass a budget for a year and your Dead Wings friends in Detroit now have something to give you crap about. There's a grr at the end. 224 says the worst from 2006. I had a great intro to improv class at Second City.
Yay.
And I got T-boned on the way home that day.
Oh, hopefully that means a T-bone steak. No, that sounds like a great day.
It's hard to say yes and after that.
I'm not touching that one. Yeah.
The worst is when the Indiana IRS levied my bank account because broke-ass Illinois didn't send the money that was withheld. Ooh, topical.
Are we broker than Indiana? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that's what that they say, but I think everybody's broke.
We have teeth.
I don't know.
Sorry,
about that.
Indiana listeners.
The worst, and we did that one. The 815, the worst is my son bringing me home a bucket of popcorn from the movies and having my weigh in for the Biggest Loser winner at work tomorrow. You got to weigh it. You got to just, you know what? If I can do anything, I don't hope it's not too late because it's been about a half hour since that text. You know what? That's a sign. Throw it away. Besides, it's already old. Like that popcorn at a certain point is not going to taste the way it tastes when you first put your hands in it at a movie theater.
Yeah.
Right?
You can do that thing where you like pretend to eat it and you're like, yum, this is delicious. Thank you. But then don't actually eat it. Appreciate the gift.
708, stale dinner rolls.
I love it. Stale dinner rolls are the worst. Oh, so disappointing.
Okay. All right. And the last one here, the worst is losing shutout at home. How about those Dodgers, huh? Northside sure look good from 35th Street.
No, that's the worst when you have to text Cub insults because your team sucks. Okay, like that's they won tonight though, so good job.
Yeah, like, but I mean they just lost 7 in a row. Yeah, there's like, not much to talk about because the Cubs lost a game.
Why can't people from this city just like both teams? Like just
I know
be a Chicago fan, man.
Yeah. There's a lot, you know, I think it's generational. I really do. I think you get down the line a little bit, and now I think younger people are like, what? There's a thing? I didn't know there was a thing. I think the generation of the kid, like of the parents who are really into it are now having kids, and those kids are like, I'm just going to look at my phone while I'm sitting in these box seats. they really don't care. All right, real quick, I had you guys, if you have any others that you want to do before we go, because I know you may have actually done some homework tonight. Dave, what do you got?
The worst is when you meet like homeless people and they have like a very touching story and like you're like crying and they're crying and then they you see that person and next week and then they have the same exact story that they gave you and you just feel betrayed.
There's a guy on Van Buren that is not far from where I live who has a sign that says, I have a job interview tomorrow.
Yeah.
I need to get a new shirt. Help me out. And you're like, oh, but then 3 days later, you see the same sign. I'm like, this my is deja advice, vu. My advice to anyone who may be panhandling for money is don't be so specific in your time.
Or maybe he just Let's had just another say, job interview.
Maybe he has one every day, and something happens to his new shirt that he buys every day.
It could be.
Yeah.
I mean, he is standing. Who knows? You're right. You're right. You know what? That was very presumptive of me, and I apologize.
But I thought he liked me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought it was a genuine friendship. That hurt my feelings a little bit.
Erica, what do you got?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
When you like get to-go food, and the plastic fork that comes with it is so flimsy that the tines go on the outside of the food you're trying to spear. It's the worst.
It is the worst.
Oh, man.
All right. Are we ready to rock? All right. Let's give away. We're going to give away two pizzas and a pair of tickets. How about that? The two pizzas, of course, are for Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. And first place is going to get a pair of tickets to Barefoot in the Park playing May 27th through the 19th of June at Leela Arts Center in downtown Des Plaines. Watch as newlyweds Paul and Corey's differing personalities take them on a wild ride. Get tickets at LeelaArtsCenter.com. All right. So for third place, let's go with 630. The worst, trying to listen to your favorite radio program and the three-year-old wants to tell you about the moth she just saw. Not now. Not really. She's the best. We did that just for the we thought about the moth conversation that came out of it.
We all have feelings about moths.
Yeah, we appreciate that you brought up moths.
Yeah.
Dave really appreciates it since he's afraid of them.
He loves them.
I don't like them.
Loves them.
All right, let's see if I can quickly find number two. So number two is going to get a pizza as well. All right, here we go. 847. This is from Ed in Joliet. Ed, the worst is when a birthday cake slid off the plastic tray as you were entering the restaurant, and it was upside down, so you had to scoop it up, rearrange the frosting, take it in, and say it slid around in the car. This is worse on so many levels. It's the worst that happened to you, and it's a little bit of the worst that you did it.
You lied. You lied about it.
You're really like moving the frosting around. Like, are you using your hands?
I'm pretty sure he uses hands. Yeah.
Like maybe like grabs like a blanket from the back of the car and he like is trying to like smear it so it looks right.
That looks like an H in happy.
I like that. Well, I like it. I like that you tried, Ed. I really like it. All right, so first place. This is exciting. Are we ready for first place?
So excited.
This is on the line. It is Sarah. Sarah, you just won the worst for tonight. Sarah, tell us again. Your great story.
Well, thanks. I'm glad that those awkward calls led to something good.
So essentially, your child at 1 year old was calling people through your Facebook app on your smartphone, people that you either A, worked with before or maybe dated before, whatever it is, embarrassing you to no lengths to the point where you need to leave the country.
Exactly.
Did I get
and
it?
Actually, I should say, too, that I mean, both my 4 year old watches me on my phone, and so then she knows where to go. She knows how to use my phone better than I do.
Watch out.
All she has to do is hit Facebook Messenger, that little button, she knows it, and then you make a call and hit video, and we've actually had situations where, like, thankfully it was a friend, but, like, my friend had been watching what's going on in my house for, like, a while.
Oh, no. All right, well, Sarah. Well, okay, you're going to get tickets to theater, and hopefully that will you can leave your phone with your 4-year-old that night.
Okay.
Thanks, Sarah. Okay. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
That was amazing.
Thanks to Erica Reed and Dave Hellum. Dave's Afrofuturism at Second City, Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Erica Reed, you got a lot of things going on.
A lot of stuff going on.
She's crafty. Also, the Strike 3 play and the Chicago Women's Funny Festival.
That's right.
Thanks to both of you for coming on The Worst this week.
Thanks for having us. This was a blast.
All right, that's going to do it tonight. We'll be back tomorrow. Another show here on The Download. Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez up next. Patty is live in Springfield. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.